Ahoy, mateys! Welcome to the GameBuoy.org video game podcast, your twice-monthly port of call for gaming news and views that maybe aren't on your radar, but most definitely should be. I'm your host, Captain Spike, and with me, as always, is First Mate Slagkick.
Yarr!
Today is May 4th, 2014, and this is episode 52, The Never Played Symphonies. Welcome again, our lovely and beautiful listeners, to another episode of the GameBuoy.org video game podcast.
GameBuoy.org video game podcast.
This week, we're going to be talking a bit about games that were, you know, pretty far along in development, that we knew about, that were sort of advertised and hyped, but ultimately never released. Before we get to that, however, it's with a heavy heart that we dedicate this episode to actor Bob Hoskins, whom you might be familiar with for his role as Mario in the Super Mario Brothers movie, whom passed away last week at the age of 71.
Yeah, it's very sad to think that both live-action Marios have now left this world.
Indeed. So, with that having been dedicated, let's get to this news so that we can get to this discussion.
Capcom has confirmed that Mega Man Battle Network 3 Blue Version and White Version will be coming to North American Wii U Virtual Console. You know, we originally heard about this because of the Australian Classification Board, and they said that they're working on bringing not only the Mega Man Battle Network 3 titles, but as well, they want to bring other GBA titles. So they'll be revealing more information in the coming month.
And, you know, that's interesting because a lot of Capcom's GBA output, aside from, you know, the Mega Man Zero games, the Mega Man Battle Network games, and, like, the sort of occasional weird offshoot like Onimusha Tactics, most of their GBA output were SNES ports. So it's, and, you know, on top of that, SNES ports of their Disney games. So it's sort of weird to hear them say that. But, you know, I guess whatever, I'll absolutely take as much content as they can give, especially if we're talking about ports of the Mega Man Zero games.
Excellent.
We also here have word from Microsoft that they are going to be leveraging their Xbox Originals TV series to fill in the gaps between game launches. You know, at this point, we had expected to have actual titles announced and confirmed, but this has not, you know, exactly been made. Microsoft did put out a press release. They were talking about the Halo TV series, something called Every Street United, which is like a reality show about soccer players. You know, they talked about a bit about their live casting of the Bonnaroo Festival. We've talked about that here on the show, as well as six film documentary series called Signal to Noise, which is going to be sort of about little-known stories of how modern technology has, you know, sort of altered the way we interact with the world. First one, of course, we've talked about here on the show, is going to be called Atari Game Over.
Yeah.
And it's going to be about, you know, the video game market crash, circa E.T.
And, you know, they were working on that landfill just a couple weeks ago, so that's set to be sometime this year.
And last, and, you know, I couldn't say whether it is or is not least, is a show called Humans, which is a quote-unquote old new drama. This is being produced along with some creatives that they sniped from BBC, so, you know, we'll see what that's all about.
Right.
Slaggy, why don't you take this next one?
Yeah, we've got some really exciting news for Sword Art Online fans, who are also PlayStation Vita owners, which maybe is just a small fraction of you, but we previously mentioned that Hollow Fragment, which is the second Sword Art Online game that is a Vita title, will be including an HD version of Sword Art Online Infinity Moment, localized for the West, which was the PSP title. So basically, we are getting 2-in-1, you know, for the price of presumably for the price of one Vita game.
Now, you know, the really interesting thing about this is that Hollow Fragment already has the storyline of Infinity Moment present in its core game. And then, you know, tons more content in addition. However, Infinity Moment did have a lot of side quests and stuff that were not present in Hollow Fragment. So there's sort of some concern on the internet. People are sort of wondering, are we getting an HD version of Infinity Moment Or is Namco Bandai just misrepresenting the repeated content that is also in Hollow Fragment? Based on their wording, and they've been very clear, you know, that we're getting an HD version of Infinity Moment. You know, I tend toward believing that this is a remake of the PSP game with, you know, higher resolution assets or whatever.
Yeah, and you know, Hollow Fragment does let you carry over some things from Infinity Moment, so it would make sense.
Yeah, well, you know, and do hope to take advantage of that, certainly. So, fingers crossed, hopefully this means that we really are getting a two-for-one, but there is some concern about it on the internet, and until Bandai Namco clarifies what's up, you know, just be aware a little bit.
Yeah. Some exciting news. This month we have classic Mega Man titles each Thursday as part of Mega May on the 3DS eShop. We already have Mega Man Extreme, which just kicked off earlier this week. On May 8th, we have Mega Man 2, Mega Man 3. On May 15th is Mega Man 4. On May 22nd is Mega Man 5. And on May 29th is Mega Man Extreme 2. You know, this is in addition to their announcement that they are working on bringing the Mega Man Battle Network 3 games to the Virtual Console.
Excellent. All right. We got word last Sunday. You may recall there was a media event relating to the Persona series. Oh my gosh, this wasn't last Sunday, silly me. During the week, there was a Persona media event. We talked about that last week when we recorded the show. This event has occurred, and the new title that has been announced is a new Persona 4 animation. This is going to be called Persona 4 The Golden Animation.
Yeah.
And it appears to be a new anime adaptation of the Persona 4 series, incorporating the storyline changes that were made between The Golden and the original release of Persona 4.
Yeah, including Marie, who, anyone who's played Golden, gotta love that, biatch.
Sony has announced that Drive Club will finally be releasing on PlayStation 4 on October 7th. And this week in WTF news, The Amazing Spider-Man 2 for Xbox One did release after all, despite having been previously confirmed to be canceled.
Weird.
And this happened that literally the moment that the morning that the game came out, an entry for it popped up on the Xbox store for download, and people were able to buy it. There was no press release stating that the release had been put back on schedule, and that morning when officials from Microsoft were contacted, nobody really seemed to have a solid answer what was going on. It has now been confirmed that the game was completed and released on schedule after all. There remains no retail release of this game, but it is available as a download for Xbox One.
Alright, Bandai Namco has put Soul Calibur Lost Swords back online after the launch issues that were basically riddled with bugs. The servers were not cooperating, and now it's apparently running smoothly, and they said, you know, everything's cleared up now on PlayStation Network, so if you have any future issues with connectivity, to report it to them.
Excellent. Disney Infinity Marvel Super Heroes has been announced for release this fall, and in addition to expanding the Disney Infinity roster to include several heroes from the Marvel Universe, PS4 and Xbox One versions of this game will be coming out.
Yes!
Yeah, I'm really excited about this. You know, it's no surprise to our listeners. I'm a huge comic book guy. I'm all about comic books. And I just cannot wait for this game. You know, I like Disney Infinity well enough already. And the new toys, I really love the designs. I think that, you know, I certainly could have done with more diversity in the playable roster we've seen so far, which is basically just the movie Avengers and Groot and Rocket Raccoon from Guardians of the Galaxy, along with a Spidey cameo. But, you know, I'm going to remain hoping that we see some Emma Frost and or Jean Grey, maybe a little Jubilee. I don't know. I'd take Storm.
All right. Well, we've received word that Tony Hawk's Shred Session is coming this summer to iOS and Android.
I'm sorry, say that name again?
Tony Hawk's Shred Session.
Say that again?
Tony Hawk's Shred Session.
Brilliant. You said iOS?
iOS and Android. It is putting a touchscreen-specific spin on the series' traditional skateboarding mechanics.
Excellent. All right. You know, I like the Tony Hawk series well enough. I'll probably...
You like to create sexy skaters.
I actually hate the create a skater mode, so whatever. But I do enjoy playing those games.
All right.
Ubisoft has confirmed that they are now, quote-unquote, fully focused on Watch Dogs Wii U now that the other platform releases have been completed. This bodes well for the later fall release of the Wii U version that we have talked about previously. And last, but certainly not least, we have a follow-up here about Borderlands 2 for Vita.
Borderlands 2!
Previously, every indication was given that we were going to have a full Borderlands 2 experience releasing on the Vita with when this game came out. Unfortunately, when this game comes out this week, in fact, multiplayer co-op will be limited to 2 players rather than the series' mainstay 4. You know, this is obviously going to impact multiplayer, you know, parties quite a bit, but if you're still down for, you know, just 2-player co-op rather than 4, it looks like the game otherwise is going to be a faithful translation of the series' trademark play.
All right.
With that all having been said, it's time for...
News. 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 Oh my god, news.
Oh my god, news.
Those of you who are fans of the Dark Souls and Armored Core series will be interested to find out that From Software has been acquired by Japanese publishers Kadokawa, and Kadokawa will now have 80% of the stock in From Software. The purchase is going to be finalized on May 21st, and basically they see it as a mutually beneficial agreement, and it'll allow From Software to, you know, kind of just be able to be a little more ambitious, expand their platforms, and, you know, allow them to make newer and more in-depth games, as From Software CEO Naotoshi Zin had shared on the merger. Well, purchase, rather.
You know, this isn't that surprising exactly. We've known for a while now that Kadokawa, after being, you know, a conglomerate that is huge in other fields of entertainment, in particular, you know, manga publishing and movie production. You know, we've known that they've been getting into the games arena for a long time. They have made other acquisitions, and, you know, they've worked with other game studios previously. So this isn't a huge surprise. And I'm actually really excited. You know, I'm a big fan of From Software. Going way back, I love, you know, the older Kingsfield games and what have you. I've been on board with From for a long time. I'm really excited to see this acquisition happen because I think From is the kind of studio that could do a lot more with, you know, more resources behind them. So I'm really excited to hear this.
Some anime exciting news. Some anime-related news that's pretty exciting. Anime game-related news, rather, is that in honor of the 25th anniversary of the classic Record of Lotus War, there's going to be a Record of Lotus War online game, an MMORPG.
Excellent.
Yeah, I mean, it's going to be developed by LNK Korea, so another, you know, these Korean MMOs are pretty big deals for, you know, people who are really into kind of like the more niche RPGs, MMORPGs, and, you know, Record of Lotus War was classic, so it'll be interesting to see how this one turns out. It looks pretty good based on the trailer, the brief trailer that has been released, and we'll keep you posted on that as it develops.
Yeah, you know, I love Lotus War just as a series. And there was a really amazing Lotus War Dreamcast game about 10 years ago that was a Diablo clone. That was just a really great time. So I'm actually really excited about this MMORPG Lotus game. There is a trailer up, and, you know, it's more of a teaser than a proper trailer, but it definitely right. got me hyped for the game. So I'm really, really, really looking forward to that. We also got word of Earthbound USA. This is going to be a documentary of the Earthbound / Mother series. They plan to be running a Kickstarter for it later this year. They're hoping to release this product in 2015, and basically the idea is to talk about, you know, sort of the fan-translated adaptation of Mother 3, talk about the Mother release for Famicom and Nintendo, which we never got on the NES, which we'll be talking about a little bit later here in this episode, in fact. And, you know, just sort of document the sort of bizarre and dedicated fandom that this series has built around it.
Yeah.
I'm really interested in reading and seeing about this, so I can't wait for this film project to happen.
Yeah. The director of the gaming merchandise site Fangamer, Jeff Benson, will be leading this project.
Excellent.
And apparently they actually met with Shigi Sato Itoi-san, so that's pretty big deal.
Apparently, if you like fast food, you should probably know that after the current Spider-Man 2 promotion ends at McDonald's, the next run of Happy Meal figures is going to be Pokemon.
OMG! We're gonna be, like, eating Happy Meals on air now, like,
we will never do that. In this week's news that is being misreported widely, Nintendo announced that they will once again not be holding a traditional E3 press conference. They will, however, have a slew of alternative events happening to build hype for their E3 presence, which will still occur as standard. They will have their normal booth at the show showing games. They're just also going to be doing a new direct-styled Nintendo Digital event, as well as tournaments for the new Smash Brothers game, and in addition to that, they will be working with Best Buy, like they did last year, to have a playable Smash Brothers kiosk at select Best Buy stores for the Play Nintendo at Best Buy event that they did last year, this year's version.
Yeah, that's super exciting. And, you know, Nintendo Treehouse is going to be doing some content, and I'm a fan of those boys. Hey.
Yeah, they'll be doing, like, hourly updates from the show floor. It'll be cool, and I know we have a lot of listeners here who are super thirsty for Bill Trinan.
Yes, I've been on the Bill Trinan train since day one, so all y'all hands off.
Well, Bill Trinan's into running trains.
Whoop, whoop.
In other Nintendo news, we have here confirmation that if you buy Mario Kart 8 when it releases and register it with your Club Nintendo account, you will get a free download of a full Wii U game. In North America, the games that you get to pick from are New Super Mario Bros. U, Pikmin 3, Legend of Zelda The Wind Waker HD, or Wii U Party.
Man, the only one I don't have is a Wii U Party.
Same here, so that's the one I'll be getting. In Europe, your choices will be New Super Mario Bros. U, Pikmin 3, Legend of Zelda The Wind Waker HD, Wii U Party, Sonic Lost World, Game & Wario, The Wonderful 101, Mario & Sonic at the 2014 Sochi Winter Olympics, or Monster Hunter 3 Ultimate.
Man, they have such a better selection, by which I mean wider selection.
You know, the thing is, I have all of those games too, except for Mario and Sonic at the Sochi Olympics.
Fuck the Sochi Olympics.
Exactly. So I'd still be picking Wii U Party. So, you know, it's something that's really interesting. I don't think we have any listeners here in Japan, but the Japanese version of this promo is very different. You will be able to download two of these titles with a 1 month time limit on them. And if you choose to upgrade these to get rid of the time limit, they will be 40% off on your purchase total. So it's a very different way of running a promo like this. And I'm actually really interested in hearing how this goes for them in Japan, because I feel like we might end up seeing more of that kind of promo if it takes off. In the meantime, I feel like we have been seeing a lot of these Nintendo promos with free games. It almost harkens back to Nintendo Power giving away free Dragon Warrior carts.
Oh, wow. Yeah, taking it way back.
But I definitely feel like we've seen a lot of promos, especially on the Europe side, where if you buy, you know, buy two of these 3DS games and get a free download of one of the other ones. So, anyway, I think it's very cool. I love the way that Nintendo is sort of experimenting with these things and seeing what the marketplace reacts to. And I really think that Mario Kart 8 looks amazing, so I can't wait, and I think it's a great game for them to be doing a promo like this with.
Fans of the Left 4 Dead series might be excited to know that a Left 4 Dead arcade game is being made for Japan. It was announced by Nasica.net, which is a Taito network service for games such as Persona 4 Arena Ultimax.
Did you almost call it Purina?
Purina 4. Meow meow. And Gunslinger Stratos.
Stratos?
Stratos. It was previously known as Project Z, but it is actually Left 4 Dead Survivors.
Excellent.
It's slated for release this year. We don't know if this is an adaptation of the original game or, like, you know, a new game or the game being re-released with more content or what.
It seems likely to me that it's just going to be a light gun game for arcades set in the Left 4 Dead fiction.
That's cute.
We have here a new game from D3 Publisher in its Simple series called Rengeki Hero. This is a game that is styled visually and in terms of level-up mechanics as a traditional JRPG, but actually plays like a twin-stick shooter.
Interesting.
Indeed. So I feel like this sounds really cool. It is a downloadable eShop 3DS game. It just came out in Japan like a week ago, and I'm really, really, really hoping that we get a release of this here in North America.
Yeah. Something kind of neat that's coming is Pokemon Art Academy. It's the latest installment in the Art Academy series, and you'll be able to start out with some simple Pokemon, and it'll proceed through over 40 types of lessons. It's still going to, like, walk you through, allow you to redo, and, you know, it looks like it's pretty complex. They show a little screenshot, like, you know, that'll teach you about drawing Voltorb, to teach you about shading and lighting, and that apparently Jirachi lesson will teach you how to draw, like, something that looks like almost three-dimensional. So, pretty cool. I'll probably be checking it out. It's going to be released in Japan on June 19th. I'm sure that it's inevitable that we'll get it.
I believe we'll get this here in North America as well.
But it's just a matter of time.
Indeed. We have here the somewhat amazing announcement by Marcus Notch Peterson, who you're probably...
Person.
Oh, I've always thought of it as Peterson. My bad. Sorry, Notch, for all the times I've gotten your name wrong. That the PC version of Minecraft has surpassed the 15 million sales mark.
That's a lot of money.
It sure is, man. And in addition to that, it has sold 12 million units on Xbox 360 and 21 million units of the Pocket Edition on Android and iOS. So basically, at this point now, Minecraft is a cultural phenomenon and is performing in terms of sales unlike any other title that I could think of in all of gaming. Like, this is one of the few instances where it's like, oh wow, that's selling even better than Mario Kart Wii.
Yeah.
Or like New Super Mario Brothers. Like,
wow.
Like, this is like, yeah, this is huge. So, you know, good job to Notch though. I'm a big fan of Minecraft, and I was just at Toys R Us yesterday, and man, they practically had an aisle of Minecraft merchandise. It was really cool.
They really did.
So, anyway, I hope that people who haven't played it keep playing it. I hope that people who have played it stick up with it. And I hope that Notch and Mojang and all those folks keep doing updates for it. Because it's really cool the way this game sort of lives and breathes and grows and adds functions and features. I love it. It's every time I play, I feel like I'm coming into a whole new experience.
Yeah. Fans of the Way Forward designed Blood Rain Betrayal, which came out about 3 years ago, will now be able to enjoy it on Steam. If you're interested, you'll be able to pick up this vampiric 2D hack and slash for $10 in North America, or 7 to 10 euros in lands closer to Transylvania.
I'm a big fan of this game. I thought that Blood Rain Betrayal was really good. You know, it's... I was hoping it would be more of a Metroidvania than it is. Instead, it's, you know, it's a 2D game with really lushly animated sprites, and a God of War-style combat system.
Nice.
Unfortunately, it is not very Metroidvania-y, but if you're looking for, you know, a cool 2D brawl, beat-em-up-style, you know, combo-based brawler, I would definitely recommend you check out Blood Rain Betrayal on PC.
Excellent.
In somewhat unusual news, we have an announcement here that Stealth Inc. 2 has been announced for release later this year as a Wii U exclusive.
Say what?
Now, you might be familiar with Stealth Inc. You know, this is a game that released as on the PlayStation mobile platform. and obviously has had, you know, a PC release. As far as I know, the first Stealth Inc. has not released on any Nintendo consoles. But because of the way that the sort of indie games environment is changing, the developers have decided to release on Wii U for Stealth Inc. 2, so it's very cool as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah. Fans of Dust 514, who were a little disappointed that it was a PS3 exclusive, will be excited to know that at the EVE Fan Fest 2014, CCP had shown a prototype of Project Legion, which is an attempt to bring the shooter gameplay of Dust 514 to the PC with an all-new sandbox approach to it. So that's pretty cool.
Yeah, it's sort of like Dust, except with more game mechanics. So it has all of the Dust gameplay, but also more traditional, some more traditionally styled EVE gameplay with resource management and what have you. So, you know, it's very cool. I'm very excited about this. I love EVE. I love the EVE universe. And I love that CCP is rebounding from their World of Darkness closure that we heard about last week when that game was canceled. I have very little to say about this one. It's simply a big enough event in this industry that I feel like it's worth noting. Call of Duty Advanced Warfare has been announced for release in November, on the 4th of November.
Yes, a lot of people are saying, whoa, it looks so good!
It is notable that Kevin Spacey is doing voice acting in the game, as well as having his likeness featured in the game.
Well, Teletubby, teleport me to Mars!
Yeah, we've been talking about this enough. Slaggy, how about you take this next one?
Those of you who were interested in the shooter MMO Defiance, which was based on the sci-fi, or sci-fi, as they changed the spelling to, television series, it is now going free-to-play. You might remember that this was not a subscription-based game, so, you know, it's really just that the initial cost that you had to shell out is now no longer going to be a thing.
Yeah, this is really strange to me. I can't think of any other time where we've had a buy-to-play game go free-to-play.
Yeah, and you know, I'm trying to think. I don't follow the show. Is the show still going on?
Yes, they're gearing up for season 2 presently.
And I remember the big appeal was that, like, oh, if you're a notable character, if you're a notable player in the game, maybe your character might end up in the show or something like that.
There was some kind of interplay between the two. I don't know how that has gone. You know, that's something that is really cool in theory, but I still have a lot of questions about the viability of, just because of the way that games are played and television shows are produced. Like, the entire game world could change in just like a week or two, but shows are produced, you know, with a bigger than that amount of lead time in between airing and production.
Yeah.
We have here news that Killer is Dead Nightmare Edition is going to be releasing on PC on May 23rd.
That's cool. Apparently it's got some pretty beefy requirements, but, you know, it's a very visually interesting looking game. You know, there was some controversy with the Gigolo missions, but apparently it was still really pretty well received. I still haven't gotten around to it, but, you know, I think I'm kind of over the social justice warrior part of it and, you know, willing to give it a shot.
You know, when I played the game, I was happy to see that the Gigolo stuff, at least as far as I had gotten before I put it down, appeared to be optional. So that made it a little easier for me to take. You know, much in the same way that I don't like Grand Theft Auto, but it's not because you can kill hookers. Like, I mean, that's just something that's in the game. The game's not about that. So too do I feel similarly about Killer is Dead. The focus isn't these Gigolo missions. So it's easy for me to just, oh, I'm just not going to do that content. At least up to the point where I played.
Yeah.
We have news here that Capybara Games' Super Time Force, which has been delayed a few times, is finally going to be releasing on Xbox 360 and Xbox One on May 14th.
Yeah.
I'm very excited about that and cannot wait to play it. We also have a report here that the studio Neversoft, whom you are likely familiar with for their work over the years on franchises such as Tony Hawk, Guitar Hero, and most recently Call of Duty, is going to be closing after a fashion. But it's not a traditional closing. They're just going to be dropping the Neversoft name and merging their studio with Infinity Ward to become, like, the new expanded Call of Duty studio.
Yeah, you might remember the Call of Duty, like, yearly release pattern by splitting it up between three studios, and now it's just going to be, I guess, two studios.
Indeed. And last, but certainly not least on the news docket today, we have word here that Blizzard has released PC versions of The Lost Vikings, Rock'n Roll Racing, and Blackthorn for free. All you need to do if you already have a Battle.net account is go to your download game clients page, and you should already have, you know, ownership rights for these three games and can download them at will. I agree.
Well, in that case, before we move on with our episode, we have a little bit of
Doom and Gloom.
Doom and Gloom.
In sad news, it is my displeasure to report that Renegade Kids' Cult County missed its funding goal. You may recall we talked about this game a few weeks ago and how excited we were and how much we hoped that it would be successfully funded. Unfortunately, that has not occurred. Fortunately, Renegade Kid is going to be talking to publishers and seeing what they can do to get this project out there, because there was a lot of positive feedback. They just ultimately weren't able to get enough funding through Kickstarter to get this game made.
Yeah.
Well, all right. I guess it's time for our discussion. So, let's get this kicked off here. You know, I have a couple of things I want to say. We're going to talk about a very nebulous concept here this week. And this is, of course, games that were hyped and announced and ultimately never released. And that's, you know, it's a really big topic. There's no way we could talk about everything. We're going to try to talk about the games that we were passionate about, that we were looking forward to, you know, through our question of the week over on Twitter and Facebook and, you know, the various social media platforms. We also heard from some of you guys about what games you guys were disappointed about being canceled after release and after getting hyped. And so we're going to talk about some of those, too. But if we miss a game, there's something that you were hoping to hear about, we would be more than happy to revisit this topic, and this is one that I would expect a year from now you'll probably see a Never Played Symphonies Part 2 episode here on GameBuie.org.
GameBuie.org!
So, the first game I want to talk about here is kind of the game that spurred this talking point up for us, and I don't really have a lot to say about it because I basically said everything I had to say about it last week.
Right.
But that would be World of Darkness. This was, of course, a MMORPG that was going to be made by CCP. It was in gestation for many years based on the World of Darkness series of pen and paper books.
Right.
And ultimately, they just could not make a compelling game product. And, you know, they had to sort of scrap the game project and close the studio full of people that they had hired on to work on that game.
Yeah, that's really unfortunate. You know, knowing that they weren't just randos trying to make an MMO, that they did have obvious experience with EVE Online, and that, you know, they had a pretty rich franchise to work with, you know, coming from the pen and paper games. It probably would have turned out pretty great, but, you know, unfortunately we will never find out.
Indeed. I don't have a lot more to say about World of Darkness, unfortunately, other than, you know, I definitely would have played it.
Right.
So I want to go back to, you know, like the 1994 era of gaming. I want to talk real quick about a game that was announced, shown at events. It was playable at San Diego Comic-Con that year. But ultimately, it basically just disappeared. And this, unfortunately, is Marvel 2099, One Nation Under Doom.
Doom!
This was supposed to be a 2D action game, action platformer, with a rotating cast of playable characters from the 2099 stable, I guess you could say, including Punisher, Ravage, Spider-Man, several of the 2099 X-Men, Ghost Rider. Not playable, you'll notice, is, of course, Doom, who was going to be the antagonist of the game, based on the storyline that I believe Warren Ellis wrote in the pages of Doom 2099, which was also titled One Nation Under Doom.
Hmm.
Unfortunately, this game was being made by, I believe it was Mindscape.
Right.
And, you know, just after working on this game, putting it together, working on it, but apparently moving along kind of slowly, sort of the funding for it dried up, and they had to cancel it just a few months after their very well-received showing off of a playable demo at San Diego Comic-Con.
That's unfortunate.
I was really displeased about this, because I'm a huge fan of comic books. We've already been over that this week. I read most of the 2099 line of Marvel Comics, and I'm just always a big fan of 2D action platformers. So this was really right up my wheelhouse. I love games with multiple playable characters, so this just, it would have been a good fit for me, and it just got, you know, canceled rather abruptly.
Yeah, bummer.
Indeed. The next game I want to talk about is Slagkick, and you probably could say more about this than I could, because you're sort of our resident Blizzard fanboy. But I want to talk here about StarCraft Ghost.
Yeah, you know, StarCraft Ghost was originally supposed to be a GameCube, Xbox, PS2 game. It was announced back in 2002, and just unfortunately, kind of with the way that World of Warcraft exploded, and at that time, you know, they were also working on StarCraft II, that just their resources were too limited to be focusing on gold, to be focusing on Ghost.
I was like, did you just say focusing on goat? And, you know, the funny thing is, I went to E3 back in maybe 2005? Well, either way, while this game was still in development, but they had it playable. Blizzard was running, like, little, like, mini tournaments for the game. And, you know, my buddy Seawolf Jason and I actually played this game a couple of times, and it was great. It controlled really tightly, and the game that I was most comparing it to in terms of first-person shooter accessibility was the first Halo.
Oh, huh.
And this is really funny to me because, you know, at the time, I really came home from that E3 feeling like Blizzard had a Halo killer on their hands.
Yeah.
It felt great, the weapons felt good, and there was a greater diversity in weapons than Halo, I felt. And I was just really surprised when this game ultimately ended up fading away because, again, even this early demo, it lacked a little bit of the typical Blizzard polish, but it felt like a really solid, good, and playable game.
Yeah, and you know, the interesting thing about StarCraft Ghost is that it has never officially been canceled. It has just been indefinitely postponed.
Indeed, and you know, they still talk about it every now and then, so maybe
yeah,
we'll
you
see.
Might remember, like, I think at a BlizzCon or some sort of investors meeting, they had a list of canceled games. And StarCraft Ghost was not listed on there, which might just be them, you know, trying to hold on to Lost Hope, or...
Now, there was a game on that list that I think you were really upset about, right? Do you want to talk about that one?
Oh, are you talking about,
It would take place in Azeroth.
Oh, you must be talking about Warcraft Adventures Lord of the Clans.
Indeed, I know that you had specifically told me that you wanted to talk about that this week, so why don't you tell us a little bit about that? My understanding is that it was going to be like a graphic novel, FMV adventure-style game.
Yeah, kind of a point-and-click adventure, black comedy, sort of just like, you know, really funny and quirky in the way that, you know, you had these Monkey Island games really popular in that era. Grim Fandango was in development. And I think actually it was Grim Fandango that kind of was the Warcraft killer, Warcraft Adventures killer, because, you know, they were really working on making a traditional, adventure point and click game. You know, they had outsourced it to have, like, you know, animation done, voice acting, and it's just unfortunately never materialized, and eventually, you know, we got World of Warcraft, we got Warcraft 3 before that, so it was just kind of a bummer to not have really been able to see what they could have done with LucasArts-style adventure game genre that was so popular in the 90s.
Yeah, I was really disappointed when this game was canceled. I was really looking forward to it. You know, I remember seeing advertisements for it back in gaming mags, seeing, you know, sort of references to it in, like, the Warcraft 2 expansions strategy guide about, like, look for these upcoming guides by, I don't think it was Prima yet, but whoever it was that did all the PC strategy guides then. And, you know, you'd see references to Warcraft Adventures, and when it just disappeared, it was really sad. I'm not even a huge, like, Warcraft nut, but at the time, I really liked it. I liked the setting. And my buddy, again, you know, Seawolf Jason, who most of my earlier gaming stories involve, he was really into Warcraft and the lore, and he knows all the names of all of the old heroes from that era of Warcraft. And so he was in particular gutted when this was canceled. That's really, to me, what I remember most was sort of that sense of disappointment when we all realized this game wasn't going to come out.
Yeah.
Next, I want to talk here briefly about kind of a weird one. And weird because we didn't know a lot about the game itself, and yet, strangely, it still got quite a few covers of video game magazines. And that is, of course, the Dreamcast remake of the Sega Genesis classic, Chokken the Forever Man.
Oh, okay.
And, you know, again, from a gameplay perspective, I don't know that I ever saw any, like, footage of gameplay or even pictures of gameplay. But this is a game that, you know, the guy who did the Chokken the Forever Man comic was working to with the studio to get this new version of the game made. And it was on, again, the cover of several prominent video game magazines back then. And yet, you know, when the Dreamcast died, the new Chokken game basically just died, and there was no discussion of porting it to any other console. It just, oh, Dreamcast is gone, so Chokken is gone. Very, very strange. But, again, I'm a huge, huge, huge fan of the original, so I definitely wanted to mention it here, just as an aside. Like, this is a game that they really hyped. The artwork they showed for it looked moody as hell. There were a lot of renders that were sort of keeping with that very creepy vibe that the Genesis game had. Which, yeah. By the way, if you've never played Chokken the Forever Man, I highly recommend it. In any event, this next one we actually have a lot to talk about, so it's probably time that we get started on that. Slack, if you could kick it off.
Yeah, so back in the day before we all really got pissed at Capcom, you know, they were putting out some Mega Man titles every once in a while. And then, was it around 2010, I believe?
More or less.
Capcom announced Mega Man Legends 3. This was, of course, going to be the third entry in the Mega Man Legends franchise. That had started on N64, correct?
It started on the PS1, actually, but there was a N64 port of Mega Man Legends. Yes,
right.
We did.
Now, as you very well know, here on Game Buoy, we've talked a lot about what has sadly happened to the Mega Man franchise over the past few years due to mismanagement, really, by Capcom. And do you want to take it from here? Because I know that you really, as a lifelong fan of the Mega Man games, really, like, took this very personally.
Yeah, well, you know, this was announced on September 29th, 2010, during a Nintendo press event for the 3DS, almost exactly 10 years after the American release of Mega Man Legends 2. And, you know, this was shown off at all of the comic conventions and game events. And, you know, Capcom didn't actually cancel the game until July 18th, 2011. So it was on for a good 8 months there. We all thought this was a real game we were gonna get. Capcom had done this new thing called the, like, dev room, where, in theory, fans were able to log in and talk with the devs about the game and about why specific stylistic choices were made in the game design and the game's art style. You know, as a little bit of a sidebar, this is something that Keiji Inafune was very passionate about, was this dev room concept. And we can see that continuing in his development of Mighty No. 9. Right down to even, you know, we've seen in Mighty No. 9 there have been fan votes for specific character designs of specific characters. That's something that they had done for Mega Man Legends 3 as well, including, you know, character designs for these new characters, Arrow and Barrett. And, you know, before the game was canceled, there was discussion that Capcom was going to release a smaller downloadable version of the game called Mega Man Legends 3 Prototype Version, which supposedly was completed, the prototype version was. According to the website GamesRadar, there was one journalist, Chris Hoffman from Nintendo Power Magazine, who actually played all the way through Mega Man Legends 3 Prototype and has on multiple occasions wrote fairly lengthy impressions articles about the game, basically talking about how good it was.
Yeah.
And, you know, we've talked here on the show about how Keiji Inafune has repeatedly said that Concept would be happy to finish Mega Man Legends 3 if Capcom would just work with him on it. He's still very passionate about it. But for now, you know, as of that previously mentioned July 18th, 2011 date, both the prototype version and the full game have been canceled, frankly, for reasons that we've still never heard. The closest might be that, you know, Capcom Europe had remarked several times that not enough people were signed up for the European dev room sessions. So, again, we ultimately just don't know why this game was canceled. There's been a lot of speculation that it was canceled as a personal fuck you to Keiji Inafune, whom, while he was staying on to sort of do consultant work on Mega Man Legends 3, had just recently at this time left Capcom to found Concept. Is there anything you'd like to add about Mega Man Legends 3, Sidekick?
No, just that, you know, it's just really unfortunate that even to this day, as far as I know, that Keiji Inafune says if they'd let me work on it, I would work on it.
He made a comment to that effect as recently as the Game Developers Conference this year in 2014.
Mm-hmm.
But all right, so Mega Man Legends 3, rest in peace. Hopefully at some point you're going to get brought back. Let's talk about a little bit of a different one. Let's talk here about the strange case of Star Fox 2.
Yeah, you know, it was originally in development for the Super Famicom / SNES, and this is a game that can be found online in the form of a ROM image for the alpha version of the game. I mean, the thing to really keep in mind is that the reason that it was shelved was because the N64 was on its way out in, you know, just a couple months, and they really just wanted to use the most advanced system they could for the next Star Fox game. But as a Super Nintendo game, you know, Star Fox, the original Star Fox was pretty visually impressive, but the footage that we've seen, or, you know, if you've played it, of Star Fox 2, looks pretty damn good, considering that, you know, it's a Super Nintendo.
Yeah, you know, something interesting about this game is that the Japanese version, at least, was 100% complete, and we have a ROM image to that effect out there on the internet. It does still have some of the, like, debug tools in the game, so it feels a little strange to be playing it, but, you know, fan subgroups have done a complete translation of the game, so you can patch it into English and play it basically all the way through. And, you know, something that a lot of people who play it remark on is that it feels very much like a prototype Star Fox 64 game. A lot of the stuff from Star Fox 64 really came from Star Fox 2, which is something that Shigeru Miyamoto-san has even openly commented on in the past. I believe the exact figure that he has always given was that about 30% of Star Fox 2 came from, or Star Fox 64 came from Star Fox 2. I would say, having, you know, seen it, that it's more than 30%, man. But, you know, it's very cool to sort of see this. And, you know, I'm a huge fan of Star Fox 64, and I do think that Star Fox 64 is better than Star Fox 2 would have been. But it's very, very interesting to see just how much of Star Fox 64 already existed in this SNES Star Fox 2 game.
Indeed.
And, you know, it was really weird why it was canceled. You know, as Sidekick mentioned, the reason for non-release was really only that the Nintendo 64 was coming out, and so Miyamoto-san, you know, just wanted to have Star Fox 64 be the marquee Star Fox title. It wasn't canceled because it was bad. It wasn't canceled because of a lack of money. It wasn't canceled because of a lack of interest or as a fuck you to an ex-dev. Like, it was just, nope. We have Nintendo 64 coming out, and we wanna place Star Fox 64 and manage that brand this way. So, Star Fox 2 got canceled. Dylan Cuthbert, whom you're probably familiar with, because he's a little bit of a name these days, had worked on this game and has basically confirmed that, you know, at the time, they felt like the 64 and Star Fox 64 were gonna come out a lot sooner than they did. And so the games got cut to give breathing room to the 64 and Star Fox 64, but ultimately they really could have released Star Fox 2 in its original window and still had a good year and a half to 2 year buffer before Star Fox 64 became a thing.
Yeah.
The next game I want to talk here about was Capcom Fighting All-Stars, which is also known as Capcom Fighting All-Stars Codeholder. This was a Capcom 3D fighting game made in the style of the Street Fighter EX series, but done as sort of a Capcom World crossover series. It would have seen returning characters Ryu, Chun-Li, Alex, Charlie, Mike Hagar, Poison, Batsu, Akira, and Strider Hiryu.
Oh.
All crossing over along with new characters Didi, Rock, Death, and Ingrid. It had like a whole story that had its roots in Final Fight, and this was really meant to be sort of like Capcom making almost like a Capcom versus Capcom game.
Mm.
There was a limited location test done, so this game did exist. It had really cool artwork done. For a minute there, Capcom was hyping the shit out of it, but ultimately, the game was canceled. My understanding at the time was that it was canceled for budgeting reasons.
That's a shame.
And, you know, ultimately, Capcom sort of revisited this concept for the 2D fighting game that you're probably familiar with as Capcom Fighting Evolution, but which was also released in Japan and Europe as Capcom Fighting Jam, which was a Namco System 246 game that was ported to PlayStation 2 and Xbox, which was a 2D crossover fighting game, basically just using sprites of characters from Street Fighter II, Darkstalkers, Street Fighter Alpha, Red Earth, Street Fighter III, and interestingly, having an all-new character that was animated new for the game being Ingrid, the character whom I had just mentioned that was to be an original character in Fighting All-Stars. Mm-hmm. You can actually find videos of Capcom Fighting All-Stars out there on YouTube. It doesn't actually look like it necessarily would have been a great game. You have to remember, it was clear to Capcom in many degrees, you can tell sort of from the outside looking in, that Capcom was trying to crack the 3D fighting nut, especially after the somewhat poor performance of Street Fighter EX. And then, you know, they went off and, you know, they did Star Gladiator and Techromancer, and even, you could probably say, like, the Power Stone games and stuff. Like, Capcom was really trying to figure out a way to make 3D fighting games happen for them.
Mm-hmm.
And this was sort of, to me, a very interesting step on that path that ultimately led to, you know, Street Fighter IV, which I don't think anyone can disagree is an extremely successful 3D fighter, even though, again, gameplay takes place solely in a 2D environment. But as a historical footnote and a game that at the time I would have loved to have played, I think that Capcom Fighting All-Stars is very interesting.
Yeah, like, you know, you'd really have to imagine how it would have changed the landscape of, you know, these Capcom crossovers had we seen this come to fruition.
Sticking with fighting games, but going back a little further in time, Slackick, do you remember Primal Rage?
I remember Primal Rage, yeah. It was like the post-apocalyptic, but also dinosaurs somehow reawakened, and like gorillas and that sort of thing.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, there was briefly to be a Primal Rage 2. This was an arcade game back in 1995. It was never released, but it did do a location test at the Sunnyvale Golfland.
Wow, that's local for us.
Well, you know, actually, all of the big fighting games used to location test at Sunnyvale Golfland. Capcom and Sega both because they have Bay Area studios, or, you know, Bay Area headquarters, used to do all of their location tests for arcade games at those,
right.
That arcade, and, the Nickel City in San Jose was a big one for location tests.
Mm-hmm.
So we're actually very fortunate to live in this area. In any event, you know, the game had new characters, including human characters that were gods that were resurrected by the worship of the little humans in the post-apocalyptic landscape.
Ah!
And basically, the game was about, you know, the old characters, the dinosaurs and apes fighting the human avatar gods, also fighting a, and this is kind of awesome, a zombie skeleton dragon named Necrosan.
Necrosan!
Anyway, you know, the game supposedly was finished, but never released. Primarily because, you know, this game was huge. It was gigantic in the arcade scene and the home ports. And for whatever reason, it died very, very quickly. And Atari just didn't have the resources at this point to make copies of this cabinet and reproduce this arcade board that at this point they figured would not sell, because the game sort of dropped out of the gaming headspace so meteorically. Like, this game went from being the biggest fighting game, which is funny to think about, to essentially not existing and nobody knowing what it was, so fast that Atari felt that there was no way that they could make money on Primal Rage 2. And they didn't have the resources to take a hit and take a risk.
Mm.
So, the supposedly finished arcade board of this has been shown at the California Extreme Arcade Convention, and that even had, like, a cabinet that had art for the game. So we've seen screenshots of this game pop up around the internet. A couple of the characters had prototypes made of the action figures that were going to release, because there was a line of Primal Rage action figures, and I guess Line 2 was going to have characters Slash Fang and Necrosan figures.
Mm.
So there are prototypes of those. And apparently, you know, back in 2012, YouTube videos started popping up of supposedly the supposedly finished game just showing off all kinds of gameplay features that we didn't even know were going to exist. So by all means, you know, this is another instance of a game that was shown off. It was hyped. I remember reading about it in Electronic Gaming Monthly and GamePro that ultimately, just for whatever reason, you know, Atari could not release it. Again, you know, the reason that at the time was accepted was that they didn't feel it could turn a profit in light of how quickly Primal Rage fell out of fashion. And, you know, there you have it.
All right.
Speaking of canceled fighting games, I want to talk here a little bit about Tattoo Assassins.
Tattoos are from the devil.
Now, Tattoo Assassins was developed specifically to be, like, a more over-the-top Mortal Kombat. Like, they wanted to, like, Mortal Kombat, basically. You know, the game was not completed, but it did get very far along in development. This was being made by a couple of guys who had previously worked on early Mortal Kombat games, and was going to be published by Data East. It was going to be a standard for the time 2D fighting game with, you know, the digitized graphics that were sort of in vogue at the moment. We saw those in Mortal Kombat. And the unique gimmick was that in addition to the normal fighting, you know, button controllers that you would have, there was also a tattoo button that every character could use to summon the powers of their tattoos!
Say what?
You know, they did do location tests for this games. And, you know, at the time, Killer Instinct was kind of big, and this game apparently played similar to Killer Instinct. Primal Rage was still doing well, because this was in 1994. But the game got a lot of negative feedback at the location tests. So, about two dozen copies of this location test cabinet were made, and this game, you know, you can find ROMs of the location test version online if you want to play it. It's apparently really ridiculous and over the top, and I guess you had, you know, each character had some ridiculous number of finishing moves. I remember reading in one of the old gaming mags about how, like, each character was going to have 10 fatalities based on the different tattoos they had.
What?
So, I have never found the ROM of this. I know that it's out there. And, you know, maybe after this recording this episode, I'm going to go play it myself, and we'll do a Game Buoy Micro Tattoo Assassins.
Tattoos are from the devil.
But still, you know, I wanted to mention that as a footnote. I was really excited to play that. I've talked here about how into Mortal Kombat I was at the time, and I was into Killer Instinct, and, you know, so I was really interested in this game, and I was really upset when it got canceled. Now I want to talk about another one of those games that was basically finished but never released. This was the PS1 almost classic, Thrill Kill.
Oh, yeah.
Thrill Kill was to be a super gory, like really gritty and dark 3D arena combat fighting game. Oh, yes, sexy. And, you know, it was basically finished. Prototype discs did get out. I have one in my collection, in fact. It's perfectly playable on a PlayStation emulator or a chipped PlayStation. There are certain commands, endings, certain fatalities that are dummied out. So if you perform them in the game will crash. Because again, it's a prototype disc. It's not a finished game, but it's basically playable. And it actually was a really great fighting engine. It was compatible with the PlayStation multi-tap, so you could play more than two players.
Hmm.
And again, you know, it's actually just a really cool game. I think in this day and age, most people who are gaming in that era are familiar with this game, so I don't want to tarry too long on the matter. But this game, it's worth mentioning, was retooled as a Wu-Tang Clan fighting game.
What?
Having never played the Wu-Tang version of this game, I don't really want to talk about that here, though, which is why I'm bringing this game up in this point. Thrill Kill, you're probably familiar with it. It was huge at the time. All of the gaming mags were talking about that. And it was very sexy gory. Like, there were like, straight-up fatalities of, like, this girl with a short skirt, like, wrapping her legs, you know, pubic area first around a guy's face and suffocating him.
Wow.
So, you know, like, it was definitely pushing the envelope. And my understanding is that EA canceled the game, ultimately, for being more edgy than they were willing to publish.
Yeah.
So, it was very controversial. It definitely would have been an adults-only rated game. So, I guess, you know, it's sort of like a kiss of death, like an X rating, or NC-17. Slackick, I know this next one is one you can talk about, so why don't you?
Yeah, this was a yet another Mega Man game that was canceled. This is Mega Man Universe, and it was going to be really interesting and different in a way. It was based off of Mega Man 2, primarily. One of the things that was the big, you know, selling point for it, or would have been a big selling point had it actually been released, was that you'd be able to design your own levels or customize existing levels. You could, you know, put platforms, obstacles, enemies, and items, and share them online. And you would be able to play as more than just Mega Man. You'd be able to play like the North American NES box art Mega Man. You could play as Ryu or Arthur from Ghosts and Goblins. And, you know, it just really would have been, I think, a lot of fun. It was going to be an Xbox Live Arcade PSN title. And then just unfortunately, you know, this was kind of really around the same time that Inafune-san left to form Concept, so I almost wonder if this had also been kind of a fuck you to Inafune-san.
That is something that a lot of people have guessed at.
I mean, it's really a shame because, I mean, can you imagine if we were like, oh, here's the Game Buoy stage with pirate bots, or I don't know, you know, just the idea of allowing for, you know, fan creativity to be part of this franchise. And we kind of saw that with Street Fighter Cross Mega Man, which, you know, they ultimately put on Capcom Unity as a free download. But
yeah, I'm of such mixed opinions on this because, if I'm being honest, you know, I love Mega Man. I love playing all Mega Man games. But I really felt like Mega Man Universe looked like a little bit of a shit show. And, you know, people, this was a game that was playable at press events, it was playable at Comic-Con. People got their hands on this game, and most of the impressions were not favorable.
That's unfortunate, because the concept of it sounded really cool.
Yeah, I was very disappointed when this game disappeared. I'm always sad when any game ever is disappeared, but I'm especially sad when it's a Mega Man game. So, you know, it sucks to be me given the way Capcom treats Mega Man.
You know, and I also wonder if part of it was just that the Mega Man games, you know, the traditional Mega Man platformers have such a rhythm to them that if you just threw, you know, this out there and let fans do whatever, that it would, like, kind of tarnish. Because, like, oh, well, I just have, like, basically unplayable levels or ones that are just, like, way too basic and don't really play into, you know, the fine-tuned design of a Mega Man game.
You know, I see what you're saying, and I agree with it, but the flip side to that is I think about someone like myself, or Seawolf Jason, Space Pirate Ben, or especially someone like Jeremy Johnson over from the Koopa Club podcast. Like, these guys understand game design. I bet any of these people could have made amazing levels that I would love to have, you know, with the right tool set that they could share with us and play online or whatever. Like, that would be awesome.
Yeah, awesome!
Awesome!
You know, I like that concept a lot, but
it would be like a Little Big Planet that wasn't awful.
Kind of, yeah.
And I just want to remark, I think Little Big Planet is cool. It's just hard for me to take it seriously because I don't think the game's controls are really meant for serious platforming, and serious platforming is what I'm into. Do you have anything else to say about Mega Man Universe, though?
Nope.
All right, well, I'm going to talk here about a very strange one. And this is only going to take probably 30 seconds of your time. I want to talk real quick about the theoretical PSP remake of my all-time favorite Sega Genesis game, Landstalker. This was apparently going to be made by Climax, much like the original game in the series. It was announced, they showed off some really super pretty artwork and renders of the game in 3D. And then after that initial reveal and announcement, they literally never talked about it again. Like, it hasn't been, like, announced as canceled, but it's been enough years that it obviously is. They announced it, they showed off a little art, and then, bam, never talked about it again.
That's unfortunate.
Yeah, it really burns my britches. This is the kind of project that if, when it was announced, we had been doing Game Buoy, we probably would have done a whole episode about Landstalker, because that game is so good.
I mean, I do remember that they put out Time Stalkers, but...
Yeah, in fact, I believe there were crossover elements in that game. The main character, Nigel, might have had a cameo or something in it. So, this is like a whole thing.
Yeah.
In any event, next one, Psychic, I think you had something to say about this one, actually.
Yeah, this is kind of an interesting story that, because we were focusing on our Disney episode...
Disney!
We were focusing, you know, on games that were released, for the most part. We didn't really touch on this one, and this, of course, is Pirates of the Caribbean Armada of the Damned. And it was going to be a 360 PS3 Windows game, an open-world pirate game, which, you know, now we're like, oh, Assassin's Creed, but, you know...
At the time, though.
And the thing is that it got positive comparisons to Assassin's Creed... But, you know, at the time, Assassin's Creed hadn't been doing pirates. Apparently, it had, like, kind of Mass Effect conversation trees, and the combat system was a little basic when they, you know, had, when people from, like, IGN, I believe, and Xbox Magazine were saying, you know, that it's, the combat's a little bit, you know, basic, but that it's pretty solid. So, you know, it really is unfortunate that we never saw this come to be. In fact, it was like there was no reason it really should have been canceled because, you know, it was almost done from what I understand. And they actually moved the staff, this was Propaganda Games, over to Tron Evolution, which of course did not do very well. And, you know, more or less we've seen Disney Interactive really just change totally its structure. I mean, you know, over the past couple of years, we've talked about it here on air. So it's just, it's unfortunate that, you know, we wouldn't have been able to see a Pirates. It was a prequel to the original Pirates movie, and it just really seemed promising.
Yeah, I was really disappointed at the time. I thought it looked like it was going to be a great game. A lot of the design concepts that they were talking about seemed really cool. I was really excited for this game. I was very disappointed when they canceled it.
Yeah, it's just a real bummer. You know, Junction Point got shuttered by Disney and Propaganda as well. So it's really a bummer to, you know, really think what it could have been. You might remember Propaganda was probably most known for their Turok reboot.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, as far as I remember, that was not poorly reviewed. I mean, it wasn't like a, you know, super blockbuster, but, you know, I remember hearing it being like, yeah, it's all right.
All right, well, let's get this show on the road. Let's talk about this next one. This would be Bonk, The Brink of Extinction. This was going to be not like a reboot, but actually like a new game in the Bonk / PC Genjin series.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's going to be based around Bonk sort of having mutating powers this time. You know, we've previously seen Bonk get superpowers based on, you know, what foods he's eating, getting angry and having, like, super cute angry powers. And this was, you know, made... This game was in development to be released as a WiiWare, PSN, and XBLA game. It was going to have online and local co-op modes. Unfortunately, it was canceled following the 2011 Tohoku earthquake and tsunami.
Right.
You know, and you may recall, there was a GameCube reimagining of the original Bonk. It was done in 3D, but it used cel-shaded graphics. It was 2D gameplay, but all, you know, 3D rendered. And my understanding is that the reception to that game was so warm that, you know, the Hudson, who is now part of Konami, wanted to jump on that and really take advantage of how well-received this property was.
Mm-hmm.
But ultimately, the game was canceled. It was going to be based around Earth being threatened by a doomsday comet that was on a collision course with Earth.
Oh, no!
And so Bonk would have to travel to the center of the Earth to steer the planet away from the comet. These transformations would have been done by touching primordial ooze, not entirely dissimilar to some kind of, like, Ninja Turtles mutation.
Right.
And Bonk would have fire powers, ice powers, micro powers, rhino powers, and more.
It's almost like a cubby sort of
yeah, right? Deal.
And, you know, the thing that's really unfortunate is that, you know, there were, like you said, there was the GameCube remake, which I believe that was only Japanese released, right?
Oh, you know, I forget that. Yeah, that was only released in Japan. I had imported it, so.
And then they had, like, a couple mobile games, but we really haven't seen anything since Super Bonk, which was 20 years ago. So it's just really sad to see that, you know, this. I think that a lot of people would have been really on board because, you know, I think we all had good times with Bonk back in the day.
Yeah, I love the Bonk series. You know, there are a few games in that series available for Virtual Console on the original Wii. I don't know if any have made the jump over to Wii U yet.
I don't believe so.
But I'm really sad to see this series suffering. It has its issues, but overall I think it's a cute, fun little series, and I'm really bummed, especially that Brink of Extinction was canceled. That was a really low moment for me. I was very disappointed to hear that.
Yeah.
Anyway, why don't we wrap up this segment of the discussion by talking about a game that was canceled that we've actually talked about the history of here on the show before. I'm talking, of course, about Sonic Extreme.
Yeah, you know, we briefly touched on this in our Sonic retrospective, but, I mean, it's a really kind of unfortunate story that really ties in with the larger Saturn story and the big failure of that console. This was, of course, going to be, you know, the first 3D Sonic. And, you know, it was in development. It was, you know, really ambitious for its time. And, you know, it actually originally started out as a 32X title. and made the jump to Saturn and PC. And it was, a lot of it was really just, you know, kind of Sega in Japan, Sega Technical Institute, Sega USA drama. And they actually wanted to use the Nights into Dreams engine as a starting point for Sonic Extreme, because it kind of, like, fit their vision. They're like, oh, wow, you know, this would be a great place to start with what we're trying to do. And initially they were able to do that, but then a few weeks later, Yuji Naka-san threatened to leave the company over it.
And we've actually told this entire story earlier on the Sonic episode, as you mentioned. But, you know, something that's really messed up about this is that literally they had a playable prototype together after just a few weeks of using this Nights into Dreams engine.
Yeah, like, so you could really tell, I mean, and you can also really tell that it was a passion project for them, because Chris Senn, you know, who, if you're at all familiar with Sonic games and, you know, in the kind of the story of this, he really was passionate about, you know, really revealing the story of this to the public, and even led a fan game effort that, you know, they were going to try and recreate it, but it unfortunately just kind of fizzled out.
Yeah. So, you know, and it's interesting because, you know, Chris Coffin, he was one of the chief programmers on this project, and he was, you know, he was so dedicated to this passion project. They got playable levels into the Knights engine with Sonic gameplay. They had pulled all that together in like 2 weeks. And then after that was scrapped, over a period of just another couple of weeks, he got an all new game engine. You know, not necessarily looking great and polished, but functional with levels in it, together. He worked himself so hard that the poor man was literally dying. He contracted pneumonia from working all of these 18-hour days, like, day in and day out, working on just Sonic Extreme all the time.
Yeah, it's really unfortunate, and, you know.
So when you say that this is a passion project, I mean, it's really above and beyond just, like, the traditional, like, oh, this is being motivated by these people wanting this to exist. Like, these people were really, literally killing themselves to get this game together, and in a fit of, I don't know, egotism, or what, Yuji Naka said, no, Sega America cannot use my engine. They're just going to have to make one themselves. And then, you know, above all, even after doing all that, and, you know, you could really in a lot of ways trace that decision to the ultimate failure of the Saturn. And then, oh, hey, Yuji Naka left Sega ultimately anyway.
Yeah, you know, they ended up just putting out a port of 3D Blast. And then Sonic Racers, or Sonic R, was it Sonic R?
Sonic R.
Sonic R, and then the collection. What was that collection called?
Sonic Jam.
Sonic Jam, yeah, so.
And, you know, it is worth mentioning that there is a copy of the early test engine that they had put together. It was sold at auction for $2,500. And we have some footage of the game, and even an ISO of the disc itself floating out there on the internet since 2007. So, you know, we do have some knowledge of what this game would have been like. It looked very cool. And, you know, it still kills me that this game, they weren't able to get it working either in its original development or back when Chris Senn tried to get the fan version created that ultimately failed in January of 2010. So it's almost like this game fell apart twice.
Yeah, it's really unfortunate.
If you want to hear more about the saga of Sonic Extreme, please feel free to go back through the GameBuoy.org archives.
GameBuoy.org archives.
And listen to our Sonic the Hedgehog episode.
Sonic.
Next up, though, I want to start here a new subcategory of games. I would want to talk not just now about games that were canceled after being hyped. I want to talk about some games that were canceled or were being made, but that were saved, oftentimes after being retooled. So the first game I want to talk about here was announced in April 1997. Right? After no video of the game having been shown for 8 years, 3D Realms released a new teaser trailer for it. Do you know what game I'm talking about?
Duke Nukem Forever.
Indeed. You know,
basically the Chinese democracy of video games.
Yeah, well, I think that that is basically true. Ultimately, Duke Nukem Forever was in development for 15 years. You know, and it really, it went from existing to basically not existing to being saved by Gearbox Software.
Yeah.
You know, 3D Realms was developing it initially. It was just going to be a Windows title. Ultimately, Gearbox Software picked it up, finished it, and released it for Microsoft Windows, OS X, PlayStation 3, and Xbox 360. And you know, this is sort of a big deal in the gaming world, or was, I should say, simply because everyone had accepted that this was a game that was never going to exist.
Right.
And yet, you know, not only does it exist, but if we could somehow remove the hype, the game itself is actually not that bad. I mean, don't get me wrong, it's not, like, good. I'm not saying, please don't say, oh, Captain Spike thinks Duke Nukem Forever was good. No, but, you know, stripping away the extenuating circumstances, it plays like, you know, a 2011 released Duke Nukem game should. Whether that's something that should exist or not is a completely different question, but overall, I would say that Gearbox was actually successful after they purchased the software that had already been completed from 3D Realms. They purchased the license and likeness rights of the character Duke Nukem Forever, or Duke Nukem Forever, of Duke Nukem. And, you know, they really put together a game that, if not good, at least does resemble a real game of its era that, you know, it's an experience.
Yeah.
I ultimately played it, just for the record, when it was on sale on, like, a Steam sale or Amazon digital sale for, like, $5. So, and for $5, I felt pretty good about my purchase.
Indeed.
Slykick, do you have any interesting anecdotes about Duke Nukem Forever?
No, just I remember that the pre-order for GameStop, I believe, was Duke's Big Package.
Ooh, girl.
I would with Duke Nukem.
I bet you would. Well, let's talk then about a different game that was saved. I want to talk about Bayonetta 2.
No one said you could touch.
You know, Bayonetta 2 is one of those games where when it was announced, we weren't really sure that it was saved. When Bayonetta 2 was officially announced, it was at an E3 event, and Nintendo was announcing it as an exclusive Wii U title.
Right.
Which, you know, it seemed well and good. But, you know, there had been rumblings earlier about a Bayonetta 2 for the original consoles that Bayonetta came out on, the PS3 and the 360. And, you know, there was a little bit of a difference here. In the earliest rumors, when Bayonetta 2 was being talked about, it looked like it was still going to be directed by Hideki Kamiya. And now the game, of course, is not being directed by Kamiya himself. But it would seem that this game, Platinum had started work on it, but ultimately they couldn't fund it. You know, Sega was starting to sort of constrict what they were doing on all of their non-marquee IP. We've talked about that here on the show over the years.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the games that got the cut was Bayonetta 2, because, you know, Platinum, it seems, couldn't get anyone to sign on and bankroll the game for them, basically.
Yeah.
So, Kamiya started working on his next projects, they all started working on their next projects, and apparently Nintendo swooped in and saved Bayonetta 2. At this point, Kamiya was working on what would become the wonderful 101, so, you know, there is a new person from Capcom, from Platinum, directing Bayonetta 2, but Kamiya is still involved in the development, overseeing it, and we have Bayonetta 2 resurrected and coming to release.
Yeah.
So, and you know, it's important to mention that while a lot of this stuff at the time was rumor, Platinum has now spoken pretty openly about the history of Bayonetta 2, that it was in development, it did get scrapped, Kamiya was working on it, and now it is what it is.
Yeah.
So, and every time I read that, as recently as just a month or two, there was another article about it. They're always very open that Nintendo swooped in and saved Bayonetta 2, that the game would not exist if Nintendo hadn't stepped in proactively to get this game back on its feet.
Yeah, and you know, this is something we covered here on Game Buoy Buoy Game Buoy.
Indeed. So this next game that I want to talk about is one that we talked about just a week or two ago. That is, of course, Conker's Bad Fur Day.
Fuck yeah, motherfuckers.
You may recall, back in the day, Nintendo and Rare both sort of had a reputation for game delays. But when Conker 64 was delayed time and time again, people started to get really concerned, and the game was basically written off as having been canceled. And then, you know, it resurfaced as what we know as Conker's Bad Fur Day. Whereas initially it looked like it was going to be a played straight, you know, I don't want to say children's platformer, but again, you know, sort of
family-friendly.
Family-friendly, thank you. You know, just like a cute little squirrel doing adventures, saving his girlfriend. And what ultimately got released was Nintendo's attempt, obviously with Rare, at doing like an over-the-top, balls-to-the-wall, like gritty, mature.
Like South Park, basically.
South Park game, yeah. You know, with a giant enemy poop and, you know, gritty warfare in the Saving Ryan's Privates stage.
Yes.
And so, yeah, you know, I don't have a lot to say about that. And a lot of these games, you know, I don't really have as much to say about as some of the straight-up canceled games. Because most of them you can just go play right now.
Right, right. And, you know, they ran advertisements for this in Playboy, but Nintendo Power refused to even acknowledge it existed, and KB Toys refused to sell it.
I remember that, because KB Toys, once upon a time, was one of the better places to get video games.
Yeah, I got
here.
All my Genesis games from KB, pretty much.
How funny. The next game I want to talk about real quick is Team Fortress 2.
Yeah.
You may recall that when Team Fortress 2 was announced originally, it was, you know, a very similar style of game, but from a visual perspective, it was a lot more just like generic warfare dudes doing shooting stuffs. Mm-hmm. And ultimately, though, it became, after several years in development hell, it got to the point where people thought this game was canceled, and it came back with, you know, a complete graphical update for which, even to this day, I would say it's still well known for.
Mm-hmm.
That presentation. So, Slykick, I know that you like Team Fortress 2 a lot. Do you have anything to say about that change?
Change. No, you know, really just that I'm glad that they went the direction they did, because I think if they had just made it very, like, you know, played straight, that it wouldn't have been as endearing and enduring as it has been.
Now, when you say that, are you talking about Team Fortress 2, or are you talking about Conker's Bad Fur Day?
I'm talking about Team Fortress 2.
I know that you are actually. I was just remarking on the fact that that actually applied to both of those games.
Oh, true.
The next game I want to talk about is Daikatana. And Daikatana is, it's a little bit different from some of these other stories, because the game didn't necessarily change a ton exactly. This was a game that was, it was announced by, you know, as the brainchild of John Romero, a lot of the staff that, you know, sort of made Doom what it was, you know, those early first-person shooters. So they had announced it for release in December of 1997. The initial game design was completed in March of 97, but, you know, games were a little different then, and Romero and the various id folks over at id Software were sure that they could take what they had already done on Quake and, you know, take that game engine and port this new game design to it and pull this game together in, like, 8 months. Ultimately, it did not release for a solid, you know, 3 or 4 years. It came out on May 23rd in 2000. And, you know, it actually had changed a bit. It was initially going to be played somewhat straight as far as we saw. The released version had sidekick characters from different time periods as you were zooming across time and, you know, genres in terms of sort of the various styles of the different worlds. And, you know, it's actually, I mean, I have to say, this is kind of an unpopular opinion, Daikatana is not necessarily a great game, but at the time it was actually a lot of fun to play.
Mm-hmm.
It did get ports for the Nintendo 64, and, amusingly, the Game Boy Color. A version was in development for the PlayStation, but was ultimately canceled during development.
Oh.
Now, there is a whole list, of course, about the development of this game. It's actually fairly interesting, because they had started off working on the Quake game engine, and they thought, you know, that, oh, with this team that we have, all of these artists and these devs, that they really thought they could do the game in, like, 7 months. And then after a different team at id had debuted the Quake 2 engine, you know, then they wanted to port everything over to Quake 2 so that they could take advantage of those new effects and what have you. So they started to do that, and then the Quake 2 engine got delayed, so they ended up not finishing switching the work they had already done until, like, 1999 already. And then, you know, there, so, you know, what they thought was going to take a week or two of work, since they'd already put so much work in on the first Quake engine, you know, they thought it was just going to take a few weeks to port everything over. It ended up taking more than a year. And then, you know, so they announced, you know, at this point, it was a big deal. They made a big to-do about, like, oh, we're going to finish the game by February 15th, 1999. And, you know, they said for sure that this was going to happen, and then they missed it, but got a demo out. The demo, however, was really strange because it was just a multiplayer deathmatch. Like, there wasn't a real game demo. It was just like a mini deathmatch. I remember that happening. I was gaming at this point. I was really into the scene at this point, and it was just so laughable. I was just, like, the demo was really awful. It ran super, super badly. And then when Daikatana took a new demo to E3, it ran even worse. Like, on the workstations that they had taken to E3 to show this game off, it was running around 11 to 13 frames a second. And at this point, it was already, like, a big to-do that the Quake engine, one of the big deals was, like, fluidity in movement and stuff. Like, it was supposed to be locked at, like, 30 frames a second, which, you know, at the time, it was a pretty big deal. So this demo was just absolute crap. And basically, Ion Storm, Eidos, all of these parent companies basically, like, took huge financial hits, and Ion Storm ultimately actually closed over this game's failure and time in development hell. It was such an expensive project, and when it finally did launch, while the game wasn't actually bad, there was no way it could be successful. They had lost too much money and ultimately folded. And, you know, they had made other bad business moves, including chairs in their offices that cost thousands of dollars per chair. Like, they really wanted to be, like, rock stars of gaming, and Daikatana was supposed to be the game that was going to get them there, and instead it was the game that ultimately put them all out of work.
Yeah, bummer.
Let's talk about a game now that, Slackick, you probably have some stuff to say about. Let's talk a little bit about the announcement of Mother 3.
Yeah, Mother 3 originally began development as a Super Nintendo game, and then later was, for, I believe, most of its development, considered as a Nintendo 64 DD disk drive game.
Indeed. And, you know, it's funny because, you know, that also tells you a lot about how long the game was in development. This game started in development in 1994, and then, you know, it transitioned from a Super Famicom title, as you said, to the 64 DD. And then there was another step where they were beginning to work on converting it to just being a Nintendo 64 standard game, for it was finally released on the Game Boy Advance on 4/20/2006.
Huh, yeah, I mean, this was going to be Earthbound 64.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, the interesting thing is, a lot of times in these games, especially when you change from, like, being a full 3D game to a 2D sprite game, you see a lot of changes made in, like, the plot and setting and stuff. As far as I know, at least, the story between Earthbound 64 and Mother 3 is largely the same.
Yeah, it's just that, you know, they basically had to convert it to a sprite-based game.
Yeah. Now, I don't necessarily want to say a whole lot about the game itself. I think it's very likely that we will someday do a Mother episode of Game Buoy.
Mother!
Man, I had made that joke in the show notes when we talk about Mother itself, and now it's not going to seem as original. I hate you. But, yeah, and, you know, you can find, there are people online have done, you know, comparisons of, like, oh, this shot that we had seen in the Earthbound 64 trailer or screenshots matches this spot in the finished GBA game. And you can actually tell, like, oh, this is that location. These characters here are those same characters, even. So it does appear to be a pretty straightforward, like, oh, they took this 3D game and ported it to just a really adorable 2D sprite game in the footsteps stylistically closer to the original Mother and Mother 2 releases. Slidekick, have you played Mother 3?
I have not played Mother 3.
All right, well, as most of you out there in Internet Radio Land know, and I'm glad that that was the answer you gave, Slidekick. I thought it was, and I wanted to use it to springboard into saying there is an amazing translation patch out there on the Internet for Mother 3. I highly, highly, highly recommend, if you're open to downloading a ROM and playing it, which I know is a tricky position philosophically to defend, because it is stealing, I would highly recommend you do what I did. Buy a cartridge of Mother 3, import it, and so then you can just download the ROM and not feel super awful about it from a moral perspective. Download this translation patch and play it. This patch is better than most professional translations I've played in my life. Like, it is really well researched.
That's great.
It has a great sense of humor. The quality of writing is super high. It is not glitchy or buggy at all. It's just, it feels like playing a real Nintendo Treehouse product. And when you really consider what that means, it's quite an accomplishment.
That it had Bill Trinan's personal touch.
I can't with how thirsty y'all bitches is. Slaggy McWaggy, why don't we talk a little bit about the in-development Final Fantasy VII?
Do we have to?
Well,
you know, this was the transition from N64 to... not necessarily N64. It was going to be an N64 game. But, you know, because the storage capacity for what Square had in mind was not sufficient, they moved it to PlayStation, and, you know, that was the big break. That was the very controversial in gaming at that time. It actually started as a Super Nintendo title, and, you know, the Final Fantasy VII, as we know it, was originally not supposed to be anything at all. Like, the original Final Fantasy VII was going to be...
Are we going to talk about Hot-Blooded Detective Joe?
Yeah, in 1999 New York, in the near future... But it ended up just, you know...
Becoming what it is.
A lot of people are confused by the tech demo that included characters from Final Fantasy VI. A lot of people think that was a demo of Final Fantasy VII, and it was going to include some of the characters from VI, but that's not the case.
No,
but,
you know, it is correct to look at that this was the game engine that Final Fantasy VII could have been running in... But that demo itself was not like a proto-Final Fantasy VII.
Yeah.
But, you know, again, the game ultimately, you know, it was delayed, it got pushed back a little, but it did get retooled, and, you know, for better or for worse, Final Fantasy VII got released and became a huge international megastar hit that really legitimized JRPGs in the eyes of most mainstream gamers.
Yeah, and, you know, I really would love if... Hironobu Sakaguchi-san would pick up the Hot-Blooded Detective Joe game again.
I know, right?
Just to see what it could have been, you know?
Let's wrap this up and wrap up the primary portion of this discussion. We do have two sidebars after this. But let's wrap this up by talking about Star Fox Adventures.
Oh, man, that's
Or,
just...
as you might have initially familiarized yourself with it,
Dinosaur Planet. I mean, this one's just always such a bummer for me, because even though, like, I would say Star Fox Adventures is a pretty solid game, you know, it gets a lot of comparisons to Wind Waker in the way that it plays, and, you know, a lot of people disliked it because it wasn't a Star Fox game, but, you know, considering what it is, I think that it's a pretty solidly developed game. The real bummer about it is that it was originally not supposed to be Star Fox at all. It featured the main character, Crystal, in a much larger... I mean, Crystal, who was in Star Fox Adventures, was originally the main character, having a much larger role in it. And, you know, it really would have been a pretty cool thing. Like, you know, she was going to lead Pack, and, you know, she was going to be fighting dinosaurs and all that. But, you know, things happened. Actually, what happened in this case is... I believe it was Miyamoto-san who said, Crystal looks like Star Fox, or Fox McCloud. And so they retooled it, and, you know, it became what it was. And she was pretty much relegated to a damsel in distress role, which was really a bummer.
Yeah, it really, really was.
And this ended up being the last Rare and Nintendo collab, I believe. So, you know, it's just really interesting to think what it could have been, and, you know.
You know, and it's interesting because the game overall was actually well-received, but it still performed really poorly, and I can't help but wonder if it isn't because it was so ham-fistedly pushed into the sort of Star Fox setting. You know, because something that a lot of people had at the time praised about the game was how well-designed it was, and that it was like a fun Zelda competitor, almost.
Yeah.
But it got a lot of really negative press, a lot of really negative fan reaction from having the Star Fox name, but not playing like a Star Fox game. And if you look at this sort of in the window of time when it was made, people were still really hungry for more Star Fox because we had only actually had the original SNES game and then Star Fox 64 before Adventures came out. So people wanted just another Star Fox game. They didn't want a Zelda game in Star Fox clothes, which is what this game sort of felt like.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's also interesting because we talked about one step of how this game was retooled, but it was also retooled in that it was originally being developed for the Nintendo 64.
That's right.
So, and, you know, they expanded upon the game design and the world and the sizes of levels and everything when they ported it over to GameCube. And then on top of that, then they turned it from Dinosaur Planet into Star Fox Adventures. So this game really saw several stages of change. And, you know, I really do feel much like you, you know, if this had stayed Dinosaur Planet, if Crystal had stayed the main character, like, I really feel like that entire franchise could have gone very differently. The Star Fox franchise, that is.
And I mean, really, Dinosaur Planet could have become its own franchise.
I think so. I do think so. And, you know, we saw the effects of this, and we were not going to talk about this game very much in this episode, but, you know, the next Star Fox release was also for GameCube, and that was Star Fox Assault, which released a little while later. It was a joint effort between Nintendo and Namco Bandai. Well, I'm sorry, they were just Namco at the time. Bandai wasn't involved yet.
Bando.
Yes.
Banjo-Kazooie.
And it had flying sequences that were amazing, like the tried-and-true flying sequences that we all love from Star Fox, but it also had third-person on-foot gameplay that turned the game into, like, a third-person shooter that, at the time, a lot of people felt like it was trying to, like, reclaim the third-person perspective for Star Fox. Like, a lot of people felt like those third-person sequences were a direct result of Star Fox Adventures. So it's hard not to wonder, you know, if Star Fox Adventures hadn't become Star Fox, if the next Star Fox game we got was Assault, would it have just been a straight-up Star Fox game? And would it have would both games ultimately have been better experiences for it?
Hmm.
And, you know, obviously the world will never know, but it's fun to think about. And, you know, certainly from the perspective of video game historians that we try to be, it's fairly interesting. So I would like to come back and talk about this again, maybe after replaying all of the Star Fox games and doing a Star Fox episode.
Star Fox, baby.
Damn right. Clock that for later this year. All right, so we've talked about the main things I want to talk about, but we do have two sidebars here. I want to talk about games that were supposed to come overseas, were announced for localization, or hinted at, but then never showed up. And then I'd like to talk about ports that were canceled. So I'm going to get this ball rolling with the obvious Shame of the Nation title. I want to talk a little bit about Final Fantasy Type-0.
Oh, that game. Final Fantasy Agito.
Exactly. You
13.
Know, and this was a game that was from the Fabula Nova Crystallis series that was going to be Final Fantasy 13, Final Fantasy Agito, and Final Fantasy Versus 13.
And now Final Fantasy 13 is just the 13 trilogy.
Right? And it's worth mentioning, you know, we didn't talk about Versus 13 to 15 in that last segment because it's not out yet. As far as we're concerned, that's not a real game yet. And we didn't, you know, it wouldn't, one way or another, it wouldn't be fair to talk about it either to them or to us until we see how that turns out.
Right.
You know, maybe once there's substantial, like, showroom floor gameplay footage from E3, we'll be in better position to at least talk about it. But for now, it wouldn't have been appropriate. And, you know, that also goes for Half-Life 3. I'm sure that we're going to get some people asking why we haven't talked about Half-Life 3 yet. And that's because, as far as we're concerned here at GameBuoy, Half-Life 3 is going to happen. But Valve works on their own time. Like, Valve time is a thing. So it's impossible to say Half-Life 3 is not coming, because it's going to. It's clear. It just might not be for another 10 years.
Yeah.
And, you know, I also want to say that about The Last Guardian.
Yes.
The Last Guardian is another one where I think a lot of people have written it off, and appropriately so, but every time asked about it, Sony still says that game is in development, but we have nothing to add at this time. So they're definitely still insisting that the game is going to exist, and I would rather err on the side of caution and say, you know, this game is going to come, and just wait until we hear more. The last game that falls in that little grouping would probably be Prey 2. And, you know, this is just a little sidebar within a sidebar, because we're here talking about Final Fantasy Type-0. Final Fantasy Type-0 ultimately released in Japan. It was delayed, but that's become kind of the norm for Square Enix on their RPGs.
Yeah, it changed from a mobile game to a PSP game.
Indeed, and, you know, initially it seemed like it was going to have, you know, social features and be sort of a more casual game, but it turned into a pretty hardcore, like, action RPG, with a focus more on the RPG elements than the action elements.
Right, card-based.
Somewhat card-based. It's actually very cool. It's not, like, card-based in the sense of, like, Magic the Gathering. It's more card-based in the sense of something like Phantom Dust.
Mm-hmm.
It's a very cool game. There are people working on translation patches online now, because you may recall several voice actors reported working on this game for English localization.
Yeah.
But for one reason or another, this remains the only Final Fantasy game in recent memory that has not crossed the pond from Japan to North America and Europe.
Indeed.
The next game I want to talk about, and this is even stranger, would be the NES Mother game.
Mother!
Tell your children not to hold my hand. And, oh, mother!
Mother!
Anyway, so, you know, this game was completed in English, and this was sort of a somewhat controversial point of contention when the ROM leaked to the internet some 10-odd years ago. You know, a lot of people, you know, we all knew Mother was out in Japan, was gonna come to America. They talked about it coming to America in Nintendo Power and stuff. And it just kind of vanished, and eventually we got Earthbound, which is better anyway. Mm-hmm. But when this ROM appeared on the internet, people had proclaimed it to be like a rip of a ROM image off of like a prototype cart for testing within Nintendo HQ for evaluation purposes. And, you know, a lot of people were like, well, this game actually has, like, different features than the Japanese version. Like, this seems like some hacker went in and added, like, a fast walk hack and, like, messed with the game and changed damage values and some things. So this was actually controversial, because for a long time, a lot of people thought that this was not a real thing, that this localization was definitely not completed, and that this was something that someone found and finished and messed with while finishing it.
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't until the Mother 1 and 2 GBA port came out in Japan that we realized this was the real deal, because this game has the Japanese version of Mother for NES or Famicom, but with all of the changes that were made for the US NES Mother release that never happened. The fast walk stuff was added, the damage changes and stuff were added, and at that point it was like, okay, well, clearly Nintendo actually was gonna release Mother in North America as a slightly retouched game to be a better game experience, but it was, you know, ultimately still canceled. And to date, the first Mother, despite being completely finished, 100% playable on NES, has not released in North America. Or Europe, as far as I'm aware. Do you have anything to say about that, Sidekick?
No, just that, you know, we'll kind of be learning more with the Mother I mean, Earthbound USA.
Oh, yeah, yeah, that'll be great for exactly that. All right, well, then let's talk now about some ports that were canceled. And we're probably going to burn through these because, you know, what can be said about these games other than, you know, they were announced, but not released for the platforms we thought would be released. The first one I want to talk about real quick is Half-Life for Dreamcast. So Half-Life for Dreamcast was a big deal because when it was announced, it was going to be the debut of the new second expansion pack for Half-Life, as well as being a console port of Half-Life, which at the time wasn't a thing. This was going to be the first appearance of the Half-Life Blue Shift expansion. The game was canceled for Dreamcast because, you know, the Dreamcast ended up dying, being pulled off shelves way before anyone anticipated. And you know, I'm still, like most gamers, I'm still very pro-Dreamcast, and I do still think that if Sega had had the money to stay in there and hang in there for another couple years, that the Dreamcast really could have been a contender.
Mm-hmm.
But they simply, after the kerfuffles with the Sega CD, and the new version Sega CD, and the 32X, and the Saturn, and all of the various iterations thereof of all of these consoles, by the time they got around to a console that really could have dug its feet in and been successful, the Dreamcast, you know, Sega was just too far gone, they had taken too many financial hits, and they died, and with it, interesting projects like, again, Half-Life with Blue Shift, which would have had some online functionality, because the Dreamcast, one of its big claims to fame, was that it came with a modem. It was the first console to come with a modem standard, rather than being like a SNES Genesis era, like, oh, you have to buy the X-Band, or, you know, even the GameCube had a modem that you could buy. Even though the GameCube was actually after the Dreamcast anyway, lol. The PlayStation 2 also came after the Dreamcast and did not have a modem standard, though there was one you could buy. So, you know, this would have been a really cool game. And interestingly enough, this port was finished. You can go online and find a disc image of Half-Life for Dreamcast, burn it to a disc, and play through the entire game.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it's always interesting to see projects like that. Now, this next one I want to talk about, I have very little to say because I've never seen any footage or gameplay pics. But apparently, following their amazing port of the first Killer Instinct for SNES, Rare was briefly working on a port of Killer Instinct 2 for the SNES before it was scrapped, ultimately, for Killer Instinct Gold for Nintendo 64. We talked a little bit about those other ports that did make it to market when we talked about Rare, so I don't know that it's worth talking about Killer Instinct 2 here other than it got canceled for Killer Instinct Gold.
Mm-hmm.
The next one I want to talk about is Capcom's Black Tiger. This was supposed to get an NES port way back, and it got canceled for reasons that remain unknown. Black Tiger was a big arcade title for Capcom. It was a really interesting 2D action platformer with RPG elements that was actually very, very popular in Japanese arcades when it came out in the 80s. I still to this day don't know why the NES port got canceled, and it's unlikely any of us ever will. If you know anything, because I do know that we have some really incredible listeners to this show that know more than I do, I dare say, please, please, please tell me anything you know about Black Tiger for NES. I'd love to hear more on that. This next one I'm including here mainly for an LOL. That is, of course, the Castlevania Symphony of the Night port for the GameCom.
Oh, huh.
So the GameCom was going to be a Tiger Electronics handheld with specs somewhat comparable to an original Game Boy, but with a modem. Like a handheld unit with a modem for internet browsing and things. And they got a whole lot of really cool Japanese developers to pledge support that they were going to port, like, PS1-era Japanese games to this device. The most notable was Castlevania Symphony of the Night, and there are screenshots out there on the internet, and bless their hearts, it looks like whoever was doing the port work was doing the best they could, but it looks like a mess.
Yeah.
So, ultimately, the Gamecom was a non-starter. It flopped as soon as it existed, and the vast majority of games for it that were announced never came to market.
Yeah.
And we have just another couple things to talk about real quick, and then we're going to wrap this up. The first one we have here was the Mega Man Anniversary Collection. Now, you might be saying, ein Minuten bitte, because you've played the Mega Man Anniversary Collection. And if you're talking about the NES collection, you're quite right. But this was the announced Mega Man Anniversary Collection that was supposed to come out at the same time as the PS2, Xbox, and GameCube versions. Except this would have been on the Game Boy Advance, and it would have been a collection of all of the Game Boy Mega Man games. And in a lot of ways, you know, this is sort of the start of Capcom's Mega Man cancellation jamboree. But basically, for reasons unknown, and, you know, there were rumors about that there was a lack of source code issues or original Game Boy emulation issues on the GBA, that, you know, basically this game, it was delayed initially by a couple of months, and then it was delayed indefinitely, and ultimately it was canceled. And only now that these original Game Boy Mega Man games are coming to the 3DS, are we finally seeing this content resurface.
Yeah.
I also want to talk about I also want to talk about Metroid 2, The Return of Samus DX. You may recall that for a minute it looked like Nintendo was going to do these deluxe DX releases of several games on the Game Boy Color. We did get the Super Mario Bros. DX.
Mm-hmm.
And we did get the Legend of Zelda Link's Awakening DX.
Yes.
Which is a great Yeah. That's a great game, and that's a great way to play it. For whatever reason, the game that I feel would have benefited the most from this enhancement package, which is, of course, Metroid 2 The Return of Samus, never made it to market. I've never seen nor heard tales of any ROMs of this. All I've ever seen were a couple of colorized screenshots of the original game. That, if I'm being honest, did not look too flattering. And last, and probably least, but I'm a huge fan, would have been a PlayStation 2 port of Capcom's classic Dreamcast Arena Fighter, Spawn in the Demon's Hand. And I've talked about Spawn in the Demon's Hand in various points in this show in the past, and I'll do so in the future as well. Spawn in the Demon's Hand was a really cool game, started off in the arcade, running probably on Naomi hardware, got a port to Dreamcast to some amount of success, because I feel like most Dreamcast players I know do remember this game very fondly, and I feel like any time I've looked for a copy to replace mine, because mine has a little bit of superficial damage, and while it still plays, I'd love to have a pristine copy, it's not super easy to find, so I have to assume it was somewhat successful. You know, we didn't used to get numbers the way we always have numbers on every game sales.
Yeah.
But it was going to get a PS2 release, and, you know, I'm not sure why it didn't. My only assumption could be that it might have been some kind of performance issue, because Spawn in the Demon's Hand was a very complex game. It had a lot going on visually, and it had split-screen multiplayer that really made the game. It was very cool. And I can't help but wonder if just porting a game that made so many specific system calls, because you have to keep in mind that the Naomi version would just be running Dreamcast. Like, it's basically an arcade Dreamcast. So it's not like they really ported it to the Dreamcast in the first place. I have to assume they probably ran into some trouble porting to the PlayStation 2. We saw that a lot in those days.
Yeah.
All right, well, Slaggy McWaggy, unless you have anything to add, I think it's time to get into our next segment.
Oh, rumors time. Rumors. I just got some rumors. Did you hear that Yuji Horii-san, the creator of Dragon Quest, is teasing Dragon Quest XI? He was asked during the Niko Niko Douga Super Meeting 3 event. There was a special stage for Dragon Quest X, and when a fan asked if there were anything that he could share about Dragon Quest X, he's like, huh, for 10? Well, actually, I'm not sure if I'm allowed to say this, but I'm working on the next one.
You know, we're including this as a rumor simply because it's being reported everywhere that he's talking about Dragon Quest XI. And that, strictly speaking, we don't know. We do know that Yuji Horii... We do know that Yuji Horii is discussing the next Dragon Quest game. We don't know for sure if he's talking about Dragon Quest XI or the next in his remake series, or if we're talking about the next, Dragon Quest Monsters game, which he also works on those. So we do know that there is new Dragon Quest in some context on the way, though, and that is exciting as hell.
Indeed. Apparently, several American companies are interested in the Yo-Kai Watch anime.
This is worth mentioning, even though we're not anime buoy, because Yo-Kai Watch has been huge. You know, we've talked about this here on the show a few times. This is the sort of big multimedia project that Level 5 has been working on.
Yeah.
And, you know, a lot of people have been asking for this game to be released in the West because it's blown up in Japan. Its week one sales were not super strong, but a lot of kids watch the anime, and the game has been selling week after week pretty consistently to the point that now it's a huge multi-million seller.
Yeah. Kind of on a similar note, Spike Chunsoft, a source from them, has revealed to Silicon Era that they're looking to bring their Attack on Titan game to North American 3DSs, and they're looking for a publisher to do so. This game has already sold, as of February 2014, 240,000 copies at retail. It's been constantly in demand, you know, and they keep shipping out copies. So, you know, I would not be surprised. Attack on Titan is huge right now in America, I mean, in terms of, you know, anime fandom, but...
Well, and it's only going to get bigger now that it's about to start airing on Cartoon Network during Adult Swim or Toonami or whatever anime block they have. So Attack on Titan is definitely just going to get bigger, and my understanding is that this game is a pretty good Manhunt-style game that, you know, it's graphically a little weak, but that supposedly, even though the single-player mode is over in a couple of hours, that the multiplayer is super fun.
Oh, good.
So, and you know, I just wanted to finish up that topic on Yo-Kai Watch, is that, to me, it's very unlikely if we got the anime that we wouldn't also get the game. And that's doubly so since Level 5 International's Facebook and stuff has been sort of teasing fans about if there were a Western version of Yo-Kai Watch, if people would be interested. So I definitely, nothing has been announced, but I definitely think all signs point to localization for Yo-Kai Watch. And I remain optimistic about Attack on Titan, because Spike Chunsoft, like, if they're straight up telling people, like, yeah, we're trying to make this happen, I think they'll get there, even as a digital-only release, maybe.
Mm.
All right, well, that's all we have. That's all we have this week for rumors and gossip, so maybe it's time that we check out Smash or Trash! Our first article here is a smash, and it comes, rather unsurprisingly, from US Gamer. This was written by Mike Williams, and I'm talking about the article, CCP focuses on what it knows best, EVE Online and PC. This is basically an article talking about, you know, the World of Darkness closure, how it affected CCP games, and sort of how they're refocusing their efforts on expansions and content updates for EVE and changing the way that they design those internally so that they can quickly bring the company back to health.
Yeah.
And I think it's a really good article. I think it's really well written, the way it lays out sort of the operative facts for each phase of these choices this company is making. I just think it's a great piece, and this is the kind of thing that when you're talking about sort of financial issues in gaming, I think this is the kind of approach that is really useful as a reader to sort of see.
Indeed. Our trash this week is from Kotaku. It is called, I Played 45 Minutes of Destiny, and it was kind of boring. It involves one of the Kotaku authors, who got a chance to go to Bungie and try Destiny, and it's not just that, it was like a little blurb like, oh, I played 45 minutes, it was kind of blah. Like, this is a pretty lengthy article. Like, basically, this author seems to have made up her mind about Destiny based on a still in development 45-minute segment of the game.
And, you know, I want to say, I'm not saying this only because I'm looking forward to Destiny, although I am. My problem here is that this writer, and, you know, we don't identify writers that write trash. We only identify writers that write smash because, you know, we want to give credit where it's due, but I don't want to bully. But I normally like and respect this specific writer a lot. However, I really feel like she constantly goes after the game for not being what she wants to play. She doesn't try to take a step back and look at the game objectively. She doesn't try to look at, like, what's good about the game. She just constantly hammers it for, like, I wish it was like this, I wish it was like that. Many, many times she brings up, you know, why she wishes the game were more like Titanfall. Which is cool. I love Titanfall, but you're not here to talk about Titanfall. You know, she talks about how this game doesn't do anything new or interesting within this space, even while talking about game design choices that are expanded and taken from other games, but taken to new places and levels. So it's like, you know, the stuff you're talking about while complaining about this game not being new or original is actually pretty new and original. I just really feel like it's sort of a hatchet job that, you know, this game isn't what she wanted it to be. It sounds like she wanted it to be Titanfall with RPG stats, which it's not. And, you know, she goes far, she keeps, like, comparing it to, like, Borderlands or Fuse and just all of these other games that, like, Bungie has been pretty open about taking cues from those games, but, you know, they state that their goals are to take it to the next step. And when this writer talks about how they're taking things to the next step, it sounds like they really have. So I'm not sure why she gets stuck then on, I just wish I could run on walls like in Titanfall.
Mm-hmm.
Like, cool, it is perfectly okay for you to have that opinion, but that opinion is not what I'm reading your article about. Like, I really want to hear about Destiny, not about Titanfall.
Yeah.
So, and again, you know, I appreciate that subjectivity and objectivity, and it can be difficult to write, you know, objectively, but that's what you're being paid to do. That's why you got to play this game for 45 minutes. If you didn't like it, that's cool. It's okay to dislike it, but tell me why you disliked it, not just that you'd rather be playing Titanfall.
Yeah. Game Buoy Extra, how many times have I said, yeah, this episode?
Probably a million. Alright, well, let's get this show on the road and begin the end.
What's going on? I said, hey, what's going on?
So this week, I spent a great deal of time playing games on my Vita.
What?
Right? Well, you know, I splurged on a 64 gig Vita memory card.
What?
Since I've been so, like, data constrained on my Vita with just a 4 gig memory card, like, I would actively not download free games off of Plus. I would actively, like, oh, I really want to buy this game, but I don't have room, so I just won't play it. Like, I just will not buy it because I don't have room for it. So now I'm finally getting to some of those games. There was a huge sale on PSN celebrating the Japanese Golden Week. I picked up Dragon Ball Battle of Z and Muramasa Rebirth. Battle of Z is really cool. I'm loving it. It's very similar to the Gundam Versus games, which I'm super into, but with almost like a Monhun element of like working in teams against sometimes like, you know, giant ape monsters or what have you. So it's very cool. It follows the story of the anime very closely, but also has, like, really cool, like, branching pathways to, like, explore, like, alternate continuity situations, or, like, oh, experience this story from a different character's perspective.
Cool. Yeah, I'm really in a Dragon Ball kick lately, so I should pick that up.
Yeah, well, during this sale this week, it's $10, so I'd recommend it.
Say what?
Yeah, dude, right? Like, that game just came out, like, 2 months ago. There is also a PS3 version that is on sale for Golden Week for $15.
What?
Muramasa Rebirth is cool. It's, you know, Muramasa from the Wii, except with, like, some balance changes and gameplay changes. It's cool. I liked it the first time. I like it again.
Nice.
I also finished my Evil run on Infamous Second Son.
Oh.
Got my first ever platinum trophy on PlayStation Network.
Did you call it Pikachu Network?
I thought I said PlayStation Network.
No, I know, but you were about, you said P. Oh, you were gonna say like PS3 Network or something?
I was gonna say PSN, and then
I was gonna say Pikachu Network for some reason.
Oh. Ah! I also picked up Mario Golf, but I played literally only a single hole on it, so I don't feel...
Oh, you only played in a single hole.
Girl.
That's a new one for me.
So, I don't feel comfortable talking about my impressions yet, but expect that next week. And last, but certainly not least, I resubscribed to World of Warcraft.
Yeah.
You know, I just wanted to revisit that world. I love World of Warcraft. I've been sort of hit a block on Final Fantasy XIV. The free company that I was a part of broke up. And so, you know, I know that a lot of the Hunty Bunch podcast sisters play on a different server, so I'm thinking, you know, about going back over to that server, but I might just cancel it for a few months and stick with just WoW at this point, because I'm really enjoying playing on Winterhoof with my new character, Bone Puncher.
You nasty.
Bone Puncher is an undead monk, and for those of you who do know me or don't, I effing love monks, I effing love the undead, and, you know, I've already, just in the last week, gotten this character leveled into his 20s, I have mounts, I'm just really loving it, I'm really enjoying it. If you're out there and you play WoW, please feel free to tweet at me, get my Battle.net info.
Ooh, get your Battle.net.
Ooh, girl.
Get your one hole in your Battle.net.
Oh, girl. By all means, I'd love to play with you either in WoW or even just in Hearthstone. And, you know, Saigi, I guess you probably want to talk about this, too?
Yeah. I also decided to come back into the World of Warcraft, and I, too, rolled on Winterhoof. I was kind of interested in starting fresh, because, you know, I talked about my many, many, many hours spent on particularly the Alliance side, and just, you know, I think I just wanted to re-experience the game without being tied into, like, oh, you know, I have 5 million characters on this server, and I'm going to get distracted. So, you know, I really had a lot of fun. I'm playing a female Tauren druid named A1. It's spelled A-Y-O-N-E, so I would love to be able to play with some Gamebooey listeners. So if you're over on Winterhoof or you want to roll there with Captain Spike and I, you really should. I'm a few levels shy of Captain Spike, but I intend to catch up tonight.
Level 19 last night, right?
Right, so I'm like...
You want to run some dungeons tonight?
Yeah, I think that's, like I said, I was probably going to try to catch up to you tonight, so... Yeah, I'm having a good time. I'm playing a balanced druid, which is something that I've played before, but, you know, just, it's like, you know, it's like riding a bike. You know, you just something that you can pick up again. It's still fun, you know, nearly, what, this is going to be its 10th anniversary this year? Or ninth, it's getting up there. So
it's,
you know,
getting up there.
You know, so I'm starting to get some hype for the new expansion. So
excellent, excellent. Yeah, me too. I have to admit,
I started a playthrough of Infamous Second Son.
Oh,
I really like it so far. I think that it's a lot more fully realized than the other Infamous games have been, which weren't bad. But, you know, I feel like it's a really fully realized game now. And I mean, I can't really, I guess, pinpoint what was not fully realized for me. I don't know. It just seems a little more immersive to me. And I think that, you know, the experience that they've had, make this being the third game in the franchise, they've really polished on what they do. I am playing a good character, and I found that it's probably in some ways easier to play an evil character, because there were a couple times where I had to restart some quests or whatever you would want to call them. Because I accidentally killed a innocent bystander. And, like, I'm very adamant about being, like, super good. But then I will also play an evil playthrough. The game looks gorgeous. I really love Delson.
I like his brother Reggie a lot.
I like both of them.
Like, I feel really guilty because, like, I know incest and stuff, but they don't even look that similar, so.
They have a definite bromance.
Like, anytime they're on screen, like, being close and emotional, I'm just like, oh my god, kiss, please.
Ah! Incest buoy.
No!
And last but certainly not least, I also started playing Persona 3, on Vita.
Oh, exciting.
And I guess, you know.
So exciting, the audience will stop and cheer.
Now, I guess this would be Persona 3, what, there was like Persona 3 FES.
Fez. Yeah, it's like a festival.
Oh, so I guess this would just be Persona 3 Portable.
Yeah, it's just P3P.
Yeah, so I'm playing as the male character because apparently they recommend the female character for people who have played before. Just because, I don't know, it changes stuff, IDK. But I just, you know, wanted to mostly experience it as it was. And it's just, it's really interesting because Persona 4 is the first Persona that I played. It's interesting to see it in the overworld, very much more of a point-and-click.
Yeah, yeah, and you know, the original PS2 release was not like that. That is for P3P, because
really?
It was a PSP game, yeah.
Now, is the PS2 version more like Persona 4, where you walk around?
Yes, yes.
Oh, interesting, because...
I vastly prefer P3P, but if you're interested in playing Persona 3 in that original iteration, it is available as a PS2 classic on PS3.
Okay, interesting. It was just a very different, it felt very different, kind of going like, oh, I'm going to do a point-and-click thing, but,
Yeah, that is unique to a P3P, and I prefer that, but absolutely, I totally see what you're saying.
I mean, I'm not too far into it, but I mean, having played Persona 4 Golden, it definitely was easy, it's easy to jump in, and I'm looking forward to, you know, playing through and experiencing this story. I'm not sure if I will go all the way back to Persona 1.
You know, you're going to have to, because I want to do a Persona episode of Game Buoy this year.
Well, in that
case... So you're just going to have to suck it up, girl.
In that case, I will. I'm kind of like, ooh. I guess not knowing that the changes were done in for Portable, I'm kind of like, ooh, if it was that big of a change between 3 and 4, having thought it was point-and-click, like, then what would 1 be like?
Oh, no, 1 is more like a typical JRPG of the era.
Okay, so yeah. So I guess then I'm putting in some groundwork for that Persona episode. Please look forward to it.
Please look forward to it. Man, I'm excited. This gives me a reason, because I still haven't done the tower content in Fez. Like, maybe it's time to do that. Mm. So, because I love Persona 3.
Part of me's
3.
Almost like, ah, I wish we could wait until Persona 5's out to do that episode.
Yeah, but I don't want to wait a year and a half to 2 years based on localization time, too. Because that's not going to be out until 2015. So, in any event, all right. Well, I guess you probably have some social links for us, don't you?
Yes, our social links question of the week was, this week we're taking a look at games that were announced for release and got some amount of media attention, E3 showings, trailers, demos, etc., before disappearing forever. What never-released game do you wish you had gotten a chance to play? Our Facebook bonus question was, are there any games that you were looking forward to seeing localized, only to have said localization canceled? We got a couple tweets in reply to the question of the week. Fix Your Face, better known as Jeremy from the Koopa Club podcast, said StarCraft Ghost, the coverage in Game Informer, LOL, hyped me up a lot for it. Ian from the Koopa Club podcast, also known as Atari Barbie on Twitter, says, does The Last Guardian count? And then Jeremy replied with a screenshot from RuPaul's Drag Race, a little bit of Reading's Fundamental crossover, saying, it's really sunny up here, but I do love me a little bit of shade.
Ooh.
And in response to Ian, we kind of addressed our personal interpretation that we choose to believe it's still coming, but we definitely see why you counted it as part of that. Over on the Facebooks, we got a response from Steve Pixel saying, canceled game Mega Man Legends 3, one of my favorite series ever. Canceled location, Giftpia. Am I saying that right?
Yeah, and you know, we didn't get to talking about that today.
He said, because it looks amazing, but it's impossible to play very far into it without knowing Japanese. Unlike something like Pokemon, which you don't need to know Japanese, really. Sorry, you were saying about Giftpia?
Yeah, and you know, again, like he said, this was actually confirmed for an English localization. And it was sort of somewhat similar to Animal Crossing in design. But, you know, the emphasis was really specifically on interacting with other people.
Mm.
So, you know, it's sort of about a character who is sort of trying to reach his adulthood by helping other people, very story-based, and very, like, very cool, like, you know, you sort of have to experiment with your behavior in this community to sort of advance characters' individual storylines and your interactions with them.
Mm-hmm.
Just a very neat concept and sort of what I had hoped Animal Crossing was going to be about before I played it.
Yeah.
No shade on Animal Crossing. It's just, as I've said here on the show, it's not really my thing.
Mm-hmm.
But this game with that sort of same sandboxy sort of environment, but with more clearly delineated goals and progression and objectives, to me, that sounds like a really great combination of these two styles. I would really love to play that game, even still.
Yeah. There's another one for you, Tally. Colin M., from the Nerd Podcast, that's Nerd with a G, said, I remember looking forward to Half-Life 2 on the Dreamcast. There's also another Dreamcast game called Agatha that was canceled. It was from the people that made Toy Commander on the Dreamcast. No Cliche was the name of the company. I'm not familiar with Agatha, but, yeah, you know, just the Dreamcast had a lot that could have been, really.
Yeah, you know, when you look at games we didn't even talk about here, stuff like Castlevania Resurrection looked like an amazing attempt at an early 3D Castlevania game. I mean, oh man, there was just so much on the Dreamcast that would have been incredible to have seen come to fruition that we just never got. You know, the later Shenmue chapters, which we certainly didn't have time to discuss here.
Ain't nobody got time for that.
Right? So, yeah, no. R.I.P. Dreamcast. I am a huge Dreamcast fan even still, and my heart hurts with you.
Your hurt hearts.
My hurt hearts.
April R. says, I was waiting for Paper Mario 2 for GameCube because Paper Mario, I was really mad when it went to Wii. I finally broke down and got a Wii to play it. Yeah, you know, and a lot of people really did not appreciate Super Paper Mario. You know, they were very put off by it. And, you know, even further with Sticker Star for the 3DS is just very much in a different direction than the first two Paper Mario games were, that being, of course, original Paper Mario for N64 and Paper Mario the Thousand Year Door for GameCube. So yeah, that one did start out as a GameCube title, and kind of like similar to the, Super Paper Mario started out as a GameCube title, and like, Twilight Princess, that shitfest, moved over to the Wii. But, I mean, unlike Twilight Princess, did not get a GameCube example. I liked Super Paper Mario, but, I mean, I definitely see for people who were expecting more of the, you know, basically spiritual successor to Mario RPG, that it was probably very off-putting.
Yeah, I actually agree with that completely, because I love Super Paper Mario. Like, I actually think it's a great game. But as a sequel to Paper Mario Thousand Year Door, which is one of my all-time favorite games, definitely, like, it's definitely in a top 20 for me. It is a little disappointing in that perspective.
Mm-hmm. Renee from the Killer Queens from Outer Space podcast,
whom I guested on last week to talk about Buffy the Vampire Slayer, you should definitely listen to that.
Excellent. Said the one game that I was really looking forward to was Ranma Half Anything Goes Martial Arts on the SNES, which was the sequel to Ranma Half Hard Battle. I remember seeing the full-page ad and anxiously waiting for it, but then I heard it wasn't going to be localized and released here since the company that owned the rights went bankrupt. That game actually got me a lot more interested in import gaming, and I ordered a copy of Ranma Half Jogi Rambuhen.
And, you know, the sort of interesting thing here is that Ranma 1/2 Hard Battle was actually the second SNES Ranma fighting game to come over to America. The first one came to U.S. by Irem, and they actually, like, completely changed it away from being a Ranma game. They called it Street Combat, and they replaced all of the characters in the game with, like, American fighting tropes.
Yeah.
Obviously, as Renee said, he's quite right that Anything Goes Martial Arts, which is not what the game was called in Japan, but is what it was going to be called here in the U.S. It did get canceled, the localization. The game came out, though. He got it. It was cool. I just, again, I think it's interesting, and I speak to you right now, Renee, if it's the gameplay that you're looking for, I definitely recommend you check out this game, Street Combat. It's kind of a shit show in terms of the art they made for it, but again, it plays just like those Ranma fighting games, and it's pretty fascinating, especially the Japanese version has Cologne in it, so that will be interesting to you if you're a Ranma fan.
All right, Daniel T., who is my future husband, as I've determined on our sister show, Reading is Fundamental, said, "The game that has haunted me for years is Sadness, the psychological horror the psychological horror game, I almost said horror thriller, announced before the Wii release. I was really looking forward to the unique motion controls, such as swinging the Wiimote to throw a rope over a wall, waving it about to scare rats with your torch, etc. Perhaps the infrequent we promised this game is real updates for about 4 years, an eventual cancellation was simply an elaborate social experiment because it did cause actual sadness." Aww.
Ah, and you know, that was funny because a lot of us in the gaming community had previously learned, you know, that Nibris was sort of not legitimate. You know, there had been some issues with Vaporware previously with Nibris. Ultimately, I think the only game that Nibris actually released was Double Bloob for the DSi, which was DSiWare. But I agree, Sadness looked incredible. The visual aesthetic looked incredible. The gameplay concepts that they were talking about were incredible. And I, in spite of myself, grew to really anticipate this game. I started to really believe in it. And I thought it was going to come out, you know. After a point, we did start to see some amount of artwork, and I thought it was going to be a real game at that point.
Yeah, bummer. He also answered the bonus question. "The canceled localization that bothers me most is for Ash, Archaic Sealed Heat."
Yes!
"That game looked amazing and stunning for its time, and I really wanted a chance to experience it, even though it wasn't supposed to be too terribly great." Sounds like, do you have something you want to say about Ash? Is it A-S-H or Ash?
I've always said it as Ash, but it does, I mean, you know, obviously it is short for Archaic Sealed Heat. And, you know, this was a Mistwalker game designed by Hironobu Sakaguchi-san. It was a tactics game. And this was one that I, too, was very, very, very excited about. You know, obviously I don't have to tell any of y'all out there that this didn't come out in the U.S., because that's why we're talking about it. But, you know, again, it was supposed to be not super good. That having been said, it did have its fans.
Mm.
And as a fan of tactics games, I feel like I probably would have been into it.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, now you've got me interested. What does this guy look like?
Who, Daniel T?
Yeah.
Super cute. Also super cute, and our friend from across the pond, Anthony E. I'm sorry, I'm Anthony, because there's no H, so maybe Anthony, I would assume. Please correct me if I'm saying it wrong. "I always thought of the Capcom 5 for GameCube that Dead Phoenix looked the most intriguing."
Yes.
Yes. "And it disappeared for so long before finally being killed, even leading to rumors that it was going to be a relaunch of Kid Icarus, which would have been cool. In terms of things not being localized, we are used to not getting stuff. I mean, we only got Earthbound this year as original release never came to Europe. Similarly, the PSP release was the first time Europe saw Final Fantasy Tactics." Oh, man, yeah, Europe, you guys really kind of get the shaft a lot of times. Fortunately, you'll have that really nice cart selection of free games to get, but, you know, I guess that's not going to make up for all these localizations that just do not happen.
And, you know, I do have to say, in terms of this show, I try really hard now to think about the EU regions and game releases, but I forget sometimes how bad it was for you guys in previous generations. That really sucks. That having been said, I'm right there with you on Dead Phoenix. I remember when the Capcom 5 were announced, even though, you know, most of them ended up not exclusive for GameCube in the first place.
Oops.
I think only PN03 ended up staying GameCube exclusive. And if that had sold better, it probably would have been ported too.
Hmm.
But Dead Phoenix looked so good, and I remember those rumors about Kid Icarus, and I believed them, honestly. I thought that was a thing that was going to happen. It still burns my britches a little bit that we didn't get that game in any context.
Yeah. Back over on Twitter, we have a few non-question of the week related social links to share. The first one comes from Twitter user YouMeGames, and he said, "Inspired by the 50th episode of GameBuoy.org, I wrote this rare song, Warning Not a Sinner, and I had linked this to you, Captain Spike. It is very, and I call bullshit on your Not a Sinner, and I call bullshit on your Not a Sinner disclaimer. I quite enjoyed it. It is a parody of The Day the Music Died, but basically the day that Rareware died.
Yeah, that was amazing.
Yeah. We got a sort of indirect, well, not indirect, we got a shout-out for Captain Spike and GameBuoy.org over with the new Killer Queens from Outer Space episode. So please go check that out.
Woohoo!
Keitaro E37 says, thanks for the mention during Picross E4. My love for Picross will forever be known. Did I mention hashtag Picross? Think Nathan said, thanks for the mention. Fun episode like always. And that does it for our social links this week. Remember, you can always go back and answer our old questions of the week. You can always tweet at us at GameBuoy.org, even if it's not
GameBuoy.org.
Even if it's not related to a question of the week, if you just want to say hi. And let's get to those social links. We love your feedback. We love iTunes subscriptions, ratings, reviews. We like your Facebook likes. We fucking love Twitter.
We love Twitter.
Our GameBuoy Twitter is GameBuoy.org with the .org spelled out D-O-T-O-R-G.
GameBuoy.org with the .org spelled out D-O-T-O-R-G.
You can find me on... on Twitter at Slagkick.
You can find me over on Twitter at SpikePoint.
You can tumble with us on Tumblr. Plus one us on Google Plus. Email us at mailbuoy@gamebuoy.org.
Mailbuoy@gamebuoy.org.
And all of these social links can be found at our home base, gamebuoy.org.
Gamebuoy.org.
Spike, please give us your shout-out.
As ever and always, I implore you to check out Koopa Club, that is Koopa with a Q and Club with a K, the award-winning podcast about gaming, Nintendo and gaming with an LGBT twist. I cannot even speak it anymore.
LGBT twist?
Right. We have been going like 3 hours. I cannot barely talk. I also, of course, want to shout out to VG Realness, serving up a weekly dose of gaming chit-chat among friends. Also, as ever and always, the Game Over Takeover, your one-stop shop to go to for geekery galore. And, of course, Orange Lounge Radio, where every gamer has a voice, and from whom I steal ever so many of my cues. I'd be remiss not to mention the show that you and I do, along with Rob Roberts from Orange Lounge Radio and Delvin from VG Realness. I'm speaking, of course, about Reading is Fundamental, where we talk about everything Drag Race, hunty.
Yes.
I also want to mention the Starboard Power Coupling podcast, a Star Trek podcast you hope doesn't fail.
Oh, you mean like the way that shout-out failed?
Bitch. And last, but most certainly not least, I want to shout out to X Nation over at culturalwormhole.blogspot.com, an awesome podcast featuring Marvel's Mighty Mutants.
Take us to a game bar.
I want to take you to a game bar!
Dude, that was like right in my ear, and also now the listeners.
Zero fucks given.
Game Bar is the podcast that fills your brain space with hours of gay video game commentary. They are basically the gay video game Prairie Home Companion and part of the Hunty Bunch. The Nerdgasm
That's
Network.
The way we became the Hunty Bunch.
Nerdgasm Network is the wildest 3 hours, but not so much anymore. That's us, I guess. The wild.
Right?
So this is the wildest shock jock video game radio show that you'll ever come across. Over on the Voice of Geeks Network, along with Orange Lounge Radio, you can find Girls Gone Wow, where you can get a female's perspective on the world's most popular MMO. And I've been able to keep up on my WoW news because of them, thankfully. And Horde House, the place for all things online gaming, but never too seriously. Video game podcaster. And I'm sorry, Starboard Power Coupling Podcast is also on VOG, Voice of Geeks Network. I can't talk anymore. Video Game Outsiders are podcasters about video gaming from the average player's perspective. The Nerd Podcast, that's Nerd with a G, features pop culture rants from a gay nerd perspective. And last but certainly not least is La Palanca Podcast, podcast por y para gay gamers latinoamericanos en español. As ever and always, our wonderful theme music was done by Zelda Reorchestrated, and we, you know, all continue to pour out a 40 for them. Thankfully, it's just Miller High Life, so we're not spending too much money.
All right, my friends. With that, this has been a long one, but thank you so much for spending your time with us this afternoon or evening or morning, depending on when you're listening to it, I suppose.
The dark hour.
We adore all of you guys. We really appreciate it. We wouldn't do what we do if not for you. And that should be a Bryan Adams song.
Everything I do, do it for you. I actually do not care for Bryan Adams.
Serving up some Robin Hood, Prince of Thieves realness, hunty.
I'm more of the men in tights.
I bet you are. Yeah. All of this having been said, thank you so much. We really appreciate your support. We will see you again soon. But until next time, keep gaming, keep thinking.
And until then, the library is closed. Ooh, wait, wrong podcast.
Say that again.
Tony Hawk's Shred Session.
Say that again.
Tony Hawk's Shred Session.
Doom!
Say that again.
Tony Hawk's Shred Session.
Say that again.
Tony Hawk's Shred Session.
Meow meow.